Diversity.
Here to have caused confusion.
Oh, trash is moron.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to this yet another special stream, the third one this week. My regular schedule has been passed aside for the what is now being called the 12-day war. And I thought, well, given that we're in this natural break in the Curtis schedule before we reach hypernormalization, is that the next one, Simon?
We can. I suggest we do the every day is like Sunday, which is a little short one next week. We can gear ourselves up, and that'll probably clear off all of the early Curtis stuff, and then we can plunge into hypernormalization.
So I thought we'd talk about what has been an absolutely crazy week, and especially the past 72 hours or so, absolutely insane. I mean, if you think about where things were from last Friday, Trump doing the bombings on Saturday, to where we are now, I don't think anybody would have believed you that we would have ended up here. Just before we get going here, let's do some shillings and things up front. Simon, where can people find you, sir?
I am on Twitter at Simon_Roberts. And the only people I'd like to shill at the moment are the Basket Weavers, run by our friend Mark, not so obvious. You'll find him pretty easily. I think they've had a flood of applications, so to speak, to join in the last week or so, which is nice. And they're a good bunch all over the country.
Yeah, they just go hiking and mountain climbing and things, you know, things like that.
Hiking, all sorts.
Yes. Horace, where can people find you, sir?
I'll second that. The Basket Weavers seem like good people. Mark Cowton seems like a good fella. And staying fit and getting fresh air and sunshine is good for you in all circumstances. My link, my Substack, is below. I haven't done an article for a couple of months because I had to concentrate on making a living. But I will. I've got an article half written, so if people want to follow me there, they will see it when it comes out.
And we're right in the middle of the summer, although we're actually in a cool spell before. I mean, it's still quite hot. There's going to be another heat wave this weekend, 34 degrees.
Ooh, are you going to retreat to Anglesey or something by the coast?
We're thinking of going away. I mean, I went to Wales last weekend. I can't stand it, so I'm thinking of going away again. So,
Did you get drizzle in Wales?
Well, it was, I mean, to give you an example, here it was 33 degrees on Saturday. Back in my hometown, it was 21 degrees by the sea, right? And it rained as well. So, I mean, there's a massive difference. It was still close. It was still close, but, you know, it's still a big 33 degrees and close versus 21 degrees and close, you know.
Yeah. I saw about that 34 Celsius is apparently coming up. I saw the Daily Mirror said Britain's face hell as the temperature reaches 34 Celsius, which I have survived before. I will say that. It's not really my idea.
I've turned Simon up. People are complaining you're quiet, Simon, so I've turned you up.
Okay. I've
turned you up to 150. How's that?
Oh, okay. Yeah, no problem. I can always turn my microphone up if people want, but
yeah, whereas me and Horace are on adjustable auto settings. Okay. Well, anyway, because it's the summer, it means that my summer sale is on promo code Scorcher, which I'll play now. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about all sorts of things. It's the Academic Agency Summer Sale. Use the promo code Scorcher. 25% off all courses. Scorcher. Get it now. Scorcher. 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 Promo code Scorcher. 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 Buy it now. You know, when I went back, my uncle who was there said, "I love that one." The first thing he said, I saw him, he said, "Scotcher." He was like, "I love that." I was like, "Okay, all right."
But according to the Super Soraway Sun today, Rupert Murdoch's rag, it's Cool Britannia 2.0. We're going back to the 90s.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, as I said on Twitter, that my original sin is that despite everything, I'm still a 90s liberal.
Rupert Lowe tweeted last night, "I miss 90s London."
Yeah, I miss it too.
Yeah.
In fact, let me share that tweet because it got quite a lot of people talking. I said, "My original sin is that despite everything, I'm still basically a 90s liberal. It's like I've installed all the relevant software, not to be, but the OS is still what it is. I don't know what to do about that." And what I mean by that is that my basic kind of instinct, sensibilities,
template.
Kind of, I'll give you an example of some of the stuff I mean, right? Okay. So I've read all the books, you know, all the stuff I've talked about this channel. I've written Populist Illusion and Prophets of Doom and all the rest of it. But like, how can I put it? Like, let's say we went out, Simon, right? And we were out in London and we met, I don't know, like a black guy, a gay guy, and I wouldn't give a shit. Would you give a shit? I just wouldn't care. You know what I mean? No. I've never acquired kind of like reflexive bigotry, if that makes any sense, or anything like that. I still basically, like, if I was to sit down and design, you know, an ideal, you know, I kind of still really just want, you know, basically just to be left alone and get on with things, and you know what I mean? So it's kind of like default, you know, I've never really gone in for kind of a hardcore ideological vision of, you know, you meet some people and they're like, oh yeah, my thing is I want to bring back like fashion, like Franco Spain or something. It's like, well, you know.
Yeah. It's always that dissonance between dealing with individuals and what we're talking about often, which is really aggregate effects, aggregate populations, you know, mass democracy failing rather than individuals being, you know, people we don't like.
Yeah. I mean, I've always said that people should direct their ire towards the government rather than towards... I always think it's generally a kind of frame trap to direct it towards people who are following their incentives.
This is the thing, because all of those people effectively, I mean, as we know, immigration has been weaponized, you know, and we've talked before about, you know, people going out and confronting the police. And I'll bring up my old cultural left favorite, Mark Fisher, here. But he talked about this phenomenon of the left diverting its attention to the wrong targets. And whether it's, you know, us, you know, fighting the sort of phenomenon of immigration as immigrants, or the left fighting, you know, the police, he said, the thing is, you've got to remember, all of these people are servants of the enemy. Yeah. If you're fighting the servants of the enemy is pretty happy about that.
Exactly. And I've always thought that the system is happiest. Right. I mean, picture like a kind of culture warrior conservative getting right up in the face of like a trans activist or something, and they're kind of braying at each other. You're not really a woman, right? And all this sort of stuff. I just feel like the system's happy with that, you know?
Yeah.
It's happy with that because it's ephemera, it's fluff, it's rubbish. But even beyond that, I've always thought that the system is also generally kind of happy about the cult, the clashes you get between, I don't know, the Tommies and the quote unquote Muslim community. Because it's like, well, it can manage that. It can frame it. It gives them opportunities to crack down or to bring in new legislation and things like that. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it is all. I mean, that's sort of stuff you've been doing with those sort of philosophical shorts recently. I mean, there is a value to that politically as well, because it is taking yourself out of that fight where you are. I mean, Adam Curtis referred to this recently. He talked to in one of his interviews about you're getting trapped in the distraction extraction machine. Yeah.
Exactly. And I mean, there's a good example of it now, right? Where I'm seeing a lot of like, what's his name? Matt Walsh, that Daily Wire guy. Oh, yeah. But, you know, I know he works with Ben Shapiro, but he's one of the good ones. He's a base one. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, they're all being like, oh no, the sky's falling in. New York is getting this new, Andrew Cuomo, right? Who is a corrupt kind of probably mafia linked, so and so,
right?
Mm-hmm. Who basically lost in the Democratic primary to this new fellow. I forget his name now. He's young. He's pro-Palestinian. Mm. He was born in Uganda and came over. Like, I don't know. He's only been in the country like 8 years or something ridiculous, right? So, but what I look at is like, well, what is the outcome there that is most damaging to power and the current status quo and to the elites that people don't like? Is it Andrew Cuomo winning and maintaining the status quo in New York? Or is it this insurgent who's going to cause massive problems for, you know, I mean, he wants to nationalize shops. And I mean, to me, this is an ideal outcome, you know, for, you know, thinking big picture is actually good. So when everybody on the American, you know, like the Matt Walshes and so on, lean into this frame, they're basically kind of like doing the bidding of the system. Does that make sense? Right. So, yeah.
Saw, I mean, someone else. Go on. Well, I just saw someone else highlighting the Ted Cruz tweet saying, you know, in response to that last night, like, if you're not a communist and you live in New York, why don't you come move to Texas? And it's like, yeah, just recreate the New York problem in Texas minus the very most extreme part of it, you know?
Absolutely. And you see, the thing is, everybody's saying, oh, like, a lot of British people are making fun and saying, oh, does this mean we get to call it New Yorkistan now? And you've got your own Sadiq Khan. But it's actually not the same, because Sadiq Khan, despite his background, is a neoliberal shell, right? He's still like a regime guy. And he's, you know, on all of the main issues, he's basically kosher, to put it that way, right? Whereas whereas this guy who's coming in is part of an insurgent. He's part of, like, he would transform the face of the Democrats. And to me, wouldn't it be way more fun for American politics for the Democrats to be in that mode, right, as opposed to, and then force the GOP to defend the system as it is, right? Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. This is why I always thought in this country it was better for the left to be in Corbynite form than it is to be in, you know, the kind of center Blairite form. Because in the Blairite form, they're powerful. Mm. You know what I mean? But anyway.
Absolutely.
Anything else before... we get going.
I just want to say, as I said the other day on Twitter, that, you know, one of the joyous things about this particular arc has been learning of the deeply sensitive and cultured Ayatollahs, and I think we should all get Ayatollah pilled. I'm going to quote here the poems of Hafiz, the one of the great Persian poets.
Hafez,
I beg your pardon. Hafez. I knew about Ferdowsi, I think it is. I'd heard that name before. But Hafez, who lived between 1325 and 1390 on our calendar. Just a brief poem here. This should sum up what we're doing here on this channel. And it's a good guide for life. Hafez says, "This path to God made me such an old sweet beggar. I was starving until one night my love tricked God himself to fall into my bowl. Now Hafez is infinitely rich, but all I ever want to do is keep emptying out my emerald-filled pockets upon this tear-stained world." Isn't that beautiful? That's like what we do.
Lovely,
emptying out our riches.
I mean, I will say that in the culture of Iran or Persia, whichever one you prefer, they do actually venerate their poets. There's seven of them. The chief, the kind of like the people's favorite is Hafez. And pretty much every Iranian family will have a copy of his poems there. There's another one called Rumi. And then kind of like the national poet is Ferdowsi, who wrote this epic called Shahnameh. So that's more kind of like political nationalist type thing, whereas Hafez and Rumi and a couple of others are more transcendental, and all their poems are kind of like love poems, but they're also like poems about the great divine nature of things. My grandfather would sit there, right, drinking a cup of tea or something. People would be talking, and he'd randomly just start reciting a poem like that.
Fantastic.
Just bellowing it out from the corner, you know.
So he'd throw out a line like this, which is a good aphorism. Forgiveness is part of the treasure you need to craft your falcon wings and return to your true realm of divine freedom.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And occasionally he'd say very cryptic things like, remember, Homer is a bird that eats only bone. Oh, yeah, okay. So he'd be like that. Anyway, how's life? How's life, chaps? It's I hate the heat, as I've told you, but I did finally, just before I left last week, beat the missus at pickleball. I finally beat her. And I did it by changing up my tactics and playing Steve Davis style, safe. Didn't try to hit any winners. I was just concentrating on getting it in, dropping no points, making no mistakes, and forcing her to make the errors. She's like, oh, you've changed something, haven't you? I was like, I'm not going to tell you what. I'm not going to tell you what. So on a personal note, that was good. I'm also doing my monk fast today because I forgot. You know, in fact, I was going to make a short soon about how I hate disruptions to business as usual. Because I always get scrambled when my regular schedule is disrupted, and obviously going back to Wales disrupted things. I forgot to do my monk fast Monday, and I remembered like after I had my breakfast. So now I'm doing it today. I'm already on my third cigar, Simon.
Well, you are bothered, moisturized, flourishing, relaxed, focused in your own lane. All that.
Yeah, reciting Hafez. Life all right?
Mine was pretty dreadful at the end of last week. I went down to London to a Basket Weaver's Shakespeare play reading in Southwark, and I parked my bike up around the corner, and then we finished the reading, wandered back to the bike. It was quite early. I hadn't really drunk anything, to be honest. I'd mainly been drinking sort of Coca-Cola all night. Got back to the bike, and some bastard had popped the panniers and stolen my helmet and my bike gear. And of course, the minimum legal to ride your bike home is a helmet, which, I mean, I could have ridden without all the other gear, but so I just thought, oh shit, I'm stuck in Southwark, and it's starting to go feral with gangs of swarthy ute going round on electric bikes, being chased by the police with balaclavas on. And I thought it was a bit like Escape from New York. And I eventually made it away by just waiting till the bike shop opened the next morning and buying a new helmet. But it was a really rotten night. Met some very nice people.
That's the trouble with London today, Simon. Not enough youth clubs. Not enough youth clubs.
That's it. A pool table would have sorted all this out. I would like to thank a few people, though. Our friend Ben Pyle, who came on or watched over by Machines of Loving Grace. He's on Twitter at Climate Resistance, CLIM number 8 Resistance. Justine Brown at Brown_bookshelf. Our Twitter guy, reply guy, Shembrox at Shembrox, Schembrox. He's so much more than a reply guy, really. And Alex Coughlin at 123, the guy you referred to as the guy who just looks like a symbol. Those people all got in touch and offered me help on the evening, which was really nice. And thank them. Even if they lived miles and miles away, it was really, really good of them to do that.
Excellent. Oris, life all right? I want to try to weed out the people who were like, hey, come on, get on with it. This is where we like to weed them out. But go on, Oris. How is life, mate?
I've also been the victim of a crime by an ethnic, but I'm trying to deal with that with the police, so I won't talk about that anymore for now. But it's just one has clouds over one's life sometimes.
Sorry to hear that.
But apart from that, it's not too bad. I don't mind the heat. I did have a question, actually. Since we're not doing Curto today, should the banter be about Curto instead?
I think there will be bits of banter that will come up, actually, when we have a look at what we're going to have a look at, because there's the stuff actually from his recent interview that sort of ties in with this stuff as well.
It's what we're talking about. And in a strange way, this is kind of like a very postmodern war that we've just witnessed, as we'll talk about. But now, did One question, Simon. You thought it would be very postmodern and meta.
Yeah.
If we actually review the video that I've just released and do a kind of commentary of it. So maybe as a way of getting us started, we can actually review my video.
Yeah.
Where I'll also talk about, I want to crush rumors started by that leaf, Skeptical Waves, who is claiming that I'm not actually sitting in the room. I am sitting in the room. He was like, oh no, this is an AI background. It's not. This is my actual bookshelf. So anyway, let's play this. And in the time-honored tradition, if you want to say something, just say stop, all right?
Fantastic. We'll pause.
Well, hello everyone. This is probably going to be my final little update video on... I'll just pause. Yes, it is my special robes that I'm wearing. I've got this idea, Simon, that I want to be like Ryu from... You know, like in a fighting game where you can change the costume and they've got like four or five different things that they always wear, right? Or in Soul Calibur, you could get like Raphael, you know, wearing his frilly costume and Raphael in the hat, you know, by selecting the costume. And I want it so I've got four distinct costumes. The Miami Vice, which is which is the one with the light, you know, the light jacket, the robe, the hat, which you can see in the background there. And what I'm tying with this smoking jacket, but it's be far too hot to bloody wear it. So, you know.
Can we read certain things into certain of the outfits that appear? You know, this is the sage kind of sort of character, and this one is the frivolous cultural entrepreneur or...
I mean, to be honest, it's mainly wearing this robe is quite cool.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
I.e., it's temperature cool. Wearing the smoking jacket is hot, and the hat is usually for when it's cold as well. Whereas the Miami Vice is a kind of summer suit, and that is this is like for cooler weather.
Noticing your camera technique is getting more relaxed. You know, as you said, it's relatively hard to master talking to camera spontaneously and keeping it light. But this looks good. You look at ease. I've heard comments about your hair. People saying you need to get it cut or something. But you have very fast growing hair.
Lynchian.
Yeah.
In fact, I've got there's this figure who we occasionally see. That who I call Morrissey, right? Because of his magnificent hair. And my missus is always accusing me of fancying him. He's like, you've got an outrageous man crush on this guy. I was like, yeah, to be honest, I do love him. Mainly because of his like diffident manner. And
effortless style.
Yeah. And his effortless kind of Morrissey hair. So maybe I'm just kind of growing it out so I can build a rapport with Morrissey, you know.
I think this is also an important question. I think we've got to know a bit about the bookshelves there, because I mean, I notice, you know, bookshelves are an important, you know, status thing now when people are sort of, you know, doing broadcasts on, you know, Talk TV or GB News.
Yeah.
You know, there's people who've got like bespoke. I mean, if you're at the Douglas Murray level, you know, you've got your bespoke vast bookshelves that are very stout. And you know, the problem with commercial bookshelves is always that sagging you get, especially with heavyweight academic books such as you've got there, you know, in the middle of the shelf. But those look reasonably sort of solid bookshelves there.
Well, my brother is unhappy because he thinks they're sagging a little bit, and I said, well, I need to reinforce them, and he was like, no, you need to get proper oak or something. He's like, these like the
proper ship's oak. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know what I can do about that, because those folio editions, you can see, are very heavy, obviously. Yeah. They kind of look cool, don't they?
Yeah.
The irony is that the books that I've actually read and work with are the ones that you can see kind of scattered around and piled up and so on, whereas the big heavy ones tend not to move that often. I'll also mention, if you just look over my left shoulder, there is a Zoltar card there. That's a little. can you see that? It's the card. It says Zoltar Speaks on it.
From Big,
which always tickled me. I used to love the film. Like, last time I watched the film Big, I was in floods of tears. Because it kind of hits me for some reason, that film, you know, regardless of what you think about Tom Hanks, and I've fallen down a few rabbit holes with Big. One of them was actually trying to find a Zoltar machine. I went to a vintage fair and went on it and got that card. And the other thing was, do you remember in Big, there's that game where they play the Crystal King like video game. I wanted to find that game and play it, only to find that they programmed the game for the film.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist.
But surely they could have sold it afterwards, as the film was quite a success. What's the tune that they danced to on the big keyboard?
Isn't it just like Chopsticks or something?
I don't know. That's always
when was Big made? Was Big sort of late 85, 86,
if I had to guess. Okay.
I mean, merch wasn't kind of as much in swing for that kind of film. But not nowadays it would be, wouldn't it? You'd get everything you wanted.
Yes. I'll also be saying, by the way, that I've got a zero tolerance. If I see any people, there was a very annoying guy in the chat yesterday who was banned, and similar bannings will happen. Listen, you're in the wrong neck of the woods. Nobody's going to change their mind on anything that we discuss here. So,
We're too old.
you just go back to Delhi with you. You know. All right. So let's carry on. The what is now being called the Iran-Israel War, or the 12-day War, as Donald Trump dubbed it. Everybody thought he was mad when he came out with this statement, but it does seem, as things stand, that this ceasefire is going to hold. And a few little more details have emerged about exactly what happened during this whole conflict. Now the Western, like the mainstream media, is trying to present this as some sort of victory for Israel. For skeptical waves, let me give you the proof that this is actually not like a backdrop, and I'm actually in the room. Do you see on the left there, just to the left of the Clive James book I've got, is a little bottle, which is little AAA's hair shampoo, child's hair shampoo, that has just been left there from when she went swimming here once. So that's an example. Why would I put that in if it wasn't a real bookshelf? Come
the
on.
The sort of detail a Globo Homo kind of generic backdrop wouldn't include, would it?
Exactly. Look at my complete works of Lenin there, three volumes. But anyway, go on, Horace.
Just for the future, if you want to prove that your background's real, you could just put something that moves or changes. You know, that's always a giveaway.
Well, I mean, I did. I gave nothing... when I did the Rupert Lowe video, I put there was a sword in the background. As a symbolic, oh, here's the sword, come and pull it out of the stone, you know, and that's not there anymore. So there we are. But as is so, song from Big is heart and soul, apparently. Often the case, okay. Nothing could be further from the truth. And if you've seen the scenes from Tehran and cities around Iran, the people are actually out in the streets celebrating with fireworks, and they're declaring a massive victory. I should say, did you guys ever play Civilization?
Yeah,
you're right.
Do you remember We Love the Emperor Day, and there was fireworks? Yeah. Tehran literally did We Love the Emperor Day with the fire. I couldn't help but laugh when I saw those scenes, because it really did look like that.
The fireworks made it.
Yeah, the fireworks. And I was thinking, I mean, they've had quite a lot of fireworks in terms of like actual missiles in the sky. It has looked like a fireworks display. I just thought it was funny that they that they did that anyway. There, obviously, Israel has come out and declared victory too. But it is obvious that this ceasefire came because Israel were running out of ammo. They were running out of specifically anti-air defense missiles. And as per reports within the Israeli government, they only had about a week left before they'd be completely defenseless. Iran did inflict a lot of damage on Israel. And as per my assessment, when this whole thing started last Tuesday, when I say damage, they hit quite a lot of really key sites, which are listed. In fact, they're listed on the Wikipedia page for it, which I thought was interesting. One of the things that they are meant to have hit is the Mossad HQ. And it's unconfirmed at the moment. It's an unconfirmed rumor. But nobody's seen the head of the Mossad since the 20th of June.
Do you think was that hit before or after this alleged phone call from Israeli intelligence to the Iranian general that was recorded?
I think that was done on the first day. And for their efforts, they got their HQ bombed. Now, that has not been confirmed. And Grok, if you ask Grok, furiously denies it.
Yeah.
What Grok says, there are no reliable sources. It has been reported in the Iranian media, but because it's not on the BBC, therefore it does not exist, basically. So there we are.
Yeah, Grok has incorporated the same thing as Wikipedia, like a list of reliable sources. And it is just, it's the same as the Wikipedia list. And it uses Wikipedia as a reliable source. This is really shit.
Yeah, I mean, I should say that as well as the head of Mossad not seen for 5 days, the Ayatollah has not been seen for quite a while. I mean, I do come on to mention this, but he has been conspicuous by his absence. Probably he's hiding. Probably he just doesn't trust a word that anybody says. So he's going to be laying low because they're going to try to assassinate him even now.
He's at a park lodge somewhere in the south of England.
Yeah, I mean, rumours go around that he's secretly been dead for ages and they just use an AI hologram or whatever. But it would be a shame, wouldn't it?
Did he get a call from Israeli intelligence as well, asking him to back out of the regime and denounce it?
Well, apparently the Americans tried to contact him before the strike and they couldn't get hold of him.
It comes up on his phone as suspected spam.
I made the joke that he didn't see the ceasefire because he's not on. He's an ex-poster. He's not on Truth Social.
is that Khamenei or is that al-Sistani that we're talking about?
Khamenei. Yeah, the supreme leader. We haven't seen him. So Sistani's in Iraq. He's in.
Okay, right.
Yeah, in any war of attrition between a much bigger country and a much smaller country, as was the case between Iran and Israel, there was just no way that the Israelis would be able to sustain a campaign where they're bombing each other. Yes, the Israelis inflicted some damage on the Iranians, but of course Iran is so much bigger and has so many more people and so many more facilities than Israel does, that the damage the Israelis did to the Iranians can really be chalked up as being quite superficial. Yes, people were killed. Yes, buildings were destroyed. They inflicted some damage. But the damage that Iran did to Israel is magnitudes worse. Since I've made this, by the way, a video of Trump is doing the rounds where he's basically confirming this. And he's saying, oh, yeah, they hit a lot of buildings, those Iranians, the ballistics. Oh, they hit them with a lot. You know, I don't know if Trump is just like sticking it to Netanyahu at the moment, but he's basically, there's a bit of, he is undermining Israeli claims by coming out and saying all of this sort of stuff. And at the same time, the media is trying to undermine his claims about, the extent of the damage, but we can get onto that.
I would say
because
that,
of what they hit.
I was going to say, as a crude read on UK mainstream media, I listened to Talk TV this morning, Julia Hartley Brewer, you know, standard issue, pro Israel, pro Ukraine presenter, was saying, the hits on the uranium processing facility, the deep bunker bomb thing, not so much damage as we were told. So even she was prepared to ventriloquize skepticism about the effect of the US bombing and whatever massive expense that involved.
Military targets, strategic targets, and simply because Israel is only so big, right? It only has so many places that can be hit. So it is actually, objectively speaking, the Iranians got the better of it. And that is why Trump was so keen to wrap up the conflict. And it seems like one of the things that has become clear is that he and the Iranians did some sort of deal where the strike on the nuclear facilities that he's currently trying to sell as being definitive and has 100% destroyed them, etc., was largely symbolic and has all the signs of being set up. For example, the anti-air, the Iranian anti-air defense, seems to have been non-active, or they seem to have kind of allowed this to happen. And there are kind of telltale signs that they were tipped off. Like, for example, that they moved all the stuff out, nobody was killed. And then in the retaliation on the US airbase in Qatar, everybody now knows that the Qatari government was involved, that there were back channels, and basically nobody was killed there. And the same deal. It was like kind of quid pro quo. We're going to do these two symbolic actions as a way to signal to the world that America is not going to get involved in this war. And subsequently, Trump has dropped his talk of regime change, and he's been saying things, and he very quickly said, well, Iran can start trading oil with China again, and that it's going to be a great trading nation, Trump's exact words, which means that clearly he thinks that he can actually work with the current authorities in Iran towards some sort of new settlement. Now, a quick word on that. Just like in America, where there's different factions within, like, the White House and the Pentagon, and there are different people, there are neocons, and there are, you know, he's got the Steve Witkoff, and he's got that other guy there, and so on. It seems like Trump has got some back channel into the guy who's the current president of Iran. Because, you know, there's the supreme leader, right? But there's also the president, this guy, he's like 80 years old, I forget his name now. His name is Pezeshkian.
That's on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah, he's actually Azerbaijani, which is a little bit controversial within Iran. He's a minority within Iran, but he has been around for quite a long time, and within their politics is seen as being quite kind of like dovish and soft, and kind of like a reformer. And if you remember,
for negotiating with America, right?
Yeah, and he's for like normalizing relations with America and so on. So, I mean, as ever, it could be that that America and Trump is dealing with this dude and his administration, but is also having to contest in the background with the Supreme Leader and the IRGC. So there's actually like, it's possible he struck that deal with those guys. We don't actually know the ins and outs. The Supreme Leader typically make sure that he's the final say on everything, but they're saying that they couldn't get hold of him, basically. So anyway, whether anybody believes him, whether anybody in the world believes Trump at this point, remains to be seen. But the whole scenario was a way of America getting out and signaling to Netanyahu and to Israel that America is not going to fight this war on its behalf, and if they don't wrap it up now, basically, Iran would have, in the space of the next week or so, completely destroyed Israel's capability to defend itself. And then, of course, it would have been vulnerable to all sorts of other possibilities. Don't forget, all of the countries surrounding Israel have no love for Israel. And all it would take, I mean, the Egyptians, even though they have a paid-off government, the population of Egypt really doesn't like Israel at all. And, you know, there are all sorts of, I guess you could say, black swan events that could put Israel in a very vulnerable situation. Another problem for the Israelis, on top of the material damage that they've taken to the strategic locations and the military locations within Israel, is that they are suffering massive economic consequences of this. As well, which they're not going to be able to sustain indefinitely, even with US aid. And then on top of that, the war with Iran had produced an emigration crisis where they're suffering from mass emigration, even though the Israeli government has banned people from leaving. They're still finding ways of leaving. They're turning up in Cyprus. They've snuck over to Sinai. I saw images of them arriving in Greece as well, where they were greeted with a horde of people with Palestinian flags, which was interesting footage to watch, to say the least.
But is that just ordinary Israeli civilians?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, they've locked down. They're actually trying to prevent people from leaving, but they're still finding ways of getting out, basically.
Shades of Ukraine.
Shades of East Germany as well, right?
Yeah, kind of interesting. They've snuck over that way into Egypt, and the Egyptian authorities are actually rounding up Israelis who fled at the moment. And this is, of course, a problem because the demographics within Israel, you know, they have, I think there's a population of 9 million, of which 2 million are Arabs. I mean, everybody talked about the refugee crisis coming from Israel being Palestinians, but I mean, it's possible you're going to get a different type of refugee crisis.
You mentioned about Israeli demographics as well. When I read White Shift by Eric Kaufman, which I think was written about 7 years ago, he said, yeah, on its present trajectory, just like much of the West, Israel would become minority, you know, as it were, which is Arabs or Palestinians anyway, in Israel, yes. Like who are Israeli citizens. So yeah, that will happen unless Israel actively averts it. So they're constantly facing a demographic threat.
And this emigration crisis triggered by basically a self-inflicted war. They didn't need to do this. Let's not forget that the Netanyahu snuck attack the Iranians. I mean, they've basically, it's causing a problem within the country. And, you know, it could put a lot of pressure on Netanyahu. He's got this really hardcore minister, I forget his name now, who is like even more hard. Can you remember his name, Horace?
Well, there's Bezalel Smotrich and there's Itamar Ben-Gvir. They're always mentioned
Ben-Gvir is the one. Ben-Gvir basically like has been trying to ban Al Jazeera. He banned anybody sharing any footage, made it a prisonable offense, and he's banned anybody from leaving, right? And so this is the sort of figure that Netanyahu, like, if the government falls, you could end up with like someone like him in power, and even more hardcore. I mean, they call him a fascist. It's kind of not that. It's not too far away from being true, I would say.
There's always been a fascist strain in Zionism. It's true.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's almost like a kind of mirror, really, of of the mid-century Germans in a strange way.
Quite consciously as well. Like they've written about that. We need to imitate what Hitler and his lot did. Like, we need that to survive or whatever. Yeah.
When I was researching Carl Schmitt, I was surprised that a lot of the Schmitt scholars and a lot of the stuff written on Schmitt was from neocons and specifically from Israeli scholars. So that was kind of interesting.
They know about the exception. Sorry.
And of course, Gottfried, of course, is a Israel supporter, friend of mine. I write for his chronicles, but Gottfried, more than anyone, was responsible for getting people to read Schmitt in the 80s and the 90s. And you see, there's a funny, this even goes into some of the Bronze Age mindset stuff, right? A lot of BAP's work starts to make sense if you think, well, okay, he could have two different intended audiences, right? Well, there could be, like, if you think, well, Israel's getting itself into a quote unquote Bronze Age mindset. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
I can't accept the suggestion that like that two different messages were being preached to two different audiences. I don't think anyone would do that, would they? Sorry, go on. I'm being sarcastic, sorry.
Well, they're all Leo Straussians, aren't they? They're all like fans of Leo Strauss, these people. So anyway, let's carry on.
Just to ask, is this forgive if I have a limited understanding here, but is this a sort of classic moment of intra-elite circulation that's happening then in both countries? I've seen reports about Iran. They say, you know, IRGC hardliners are getting a bit of leverage at this moment.
Yeah, well, I come on to talk about yes, basically, that this is what's happening. Right. Both countries are becoming more militant in Israel itself now, not in the West Bank or Gaza. Actual Israel has got 2 million Arab population and about 7 million Jewish population. So any kind of mass exodus is going to affect that delicate balance within the country as well. Do you think that's a real problem for Israel? Because they're basically dealing with like exodus specialists, you could say. It's kind of like how are they going to stop them leaving? This is a serious question. There's also this thing where so many of them are dual national. So when they come, it is reported in the press of, oh, Britain's returning to Britain or Americans returning to America. But they're actually just like Israelis who are just like going home.
I would think nearly all the people who have the option of another passport have it. In Israel, I mean. And people who are born in Israel to parents who are born in Israel, maybe not. But anyone who's moved there from Britain or just, yeah, or like their dad's British or something, you know, got a British passport, they probably do keep that. Because a lot of people, I'm sure, would see Israel as a project, not necessarily one that's going to succeed. It may fall apart in some way. It seems increasingly precarious to me. And yeah, so I wouldn't be surprised at all if like half or more of the population has foreign passports.
This is a not commonly understood dynamic of the settlers as well. You know, they talk about the settlements in the West Bank and, you know, the depending on what, you know, the legal or illegal, whichever way you want to look at it. Lots of those settlers are actually just Americans. They've like moved from New York and gone and lived there. You know, I think that Caroline Glick is one. I mean, if I misspoke, I apologize, but I think she was like born and brought up in America, but she's gone over there to be like a hardcore Israeli nationalist and a settler. Yeah. So, you know, so
both the documentaries Louis Theroux has done on the settlers out there, he's met Americans, yeah. And they're as fanatical as anyone, some of the most fanatical. And these are people straight out of Brooklyn.
I find that dynamic really odd. Because it kind of like, it's putting yourself in a lot of danger, isn't it? Like it's kind of takes some like gonads to go and do that. But also like why?
True belief as well, right?
Yeah, but why would you do it? It's also just like you're basically putting yourself really in harm's way. So it's kind of, I find it a little bit strange, but anyway. In fact, some analysts are saying at the moment that Israel is actually facing the prospect of collapse quite soon, and that Netanyahu's government is facing a lot of pressures, both internally and now, of course, with Trump's recent tirade, possibly externally too. Our support for Israel within America has absolutely cratered. I mean, can we just talk about this a bit? Can you believe the stuff you're seeing coming out of America every day? I mean, it's just like some of the people are pretty mainstream as well. I mean, I played the Crowder clip yesterday, but like Alex, it's like they, it's like the floodgates have opened, and now it's like, it's all right for everybody to kind of pile on and rail on Israel. That wasn't happening even a year ago, or even two weeks ago.
And at the same time, the pro rhetoric getting more vicious. That Mark Levin comment about DNA.
Oh, horrible! Yeah.
That is proper racial hatred of, well, most of the world as well. he is particularly when they say that, yeah, like they say, yeah, anti-Semitism is something they believe, like, is to destroy anti-Semitism is one of the highest priorities in the world, and they also say it's in your DNA. So the implication of that is obvious, right?
That's very.
And I don't know. I don't know if Mark Levin has thought it through, but I mean, he's saying I want to wipe you all out, effectively.
Do you think he'll be fired from Fox for? Because he's been going, like, even by their standards and the standard of insane neocons, he's pushing the line, isn't he? Saying this sort of stuff. I mean, surely he's just going to be fired. No?
If he's careful, if he's all right, maybe it's that he's allowed to say what he wants on Twitter or something. I don't know. I mean, Fox is pretty crackers as well. Like, I don't know necessarily in terms of Zionists. Like, Rupert Murdoch, I know, is a massive Zionist. But Fox, I think, also just works for the military, like, industries, right, and related industries, as far as I can tell, because their programs, ever since I first saw Fox like 25 years ago, it's just bonkers and it's stupid as well. Like, but, it's just, I mean, more military.
But I want to talk about this a second, right, because the number of clips, and these clips get hundreds and thousands of likes, you know, some of them 200,000 plus. of people that I've never even seen before. There was this like religious guy going around just saying like, look, you know, and the rhetoric is, how can I say, like hardcore. That there are things that if people said in this country, you'd probably get Keir Starmer knocking on your door. Do you know what I mean?
And it's what they accuse Iran of as well, religious extremism.
And I'm not talking about the Mark Levins chorus. I'm talking about anti-Israel voices in America. I mean, the rhetoric is hot. It's hot. It's stuff that maybe a year ago you'd only catch somebody like Nick Fuentes saying, right? Now Nick Fuentes sounds mild compared to some of these clips I've been seeing doing the rounds. And I've wondered more than once, right? This is why I want to talk about this, because tell me if I'm mad. I actually wonder if there's a reason, if there's a kind of, I've always, maybe this is just paranoia on my part, but I always think like there are things that you're meant to see. Like, I feel like we were meant to see the Tucker Ted Cruz interview, right? And I do wonder if there are elements of the American deep state, you know, that have actually just had enough of Israel and are basically like putting massive pressure on by allowing this stuff to roll. Because none of these people are being banned or off X or, you know, some of them have got very, very big channels and it's just being allowed to run and run.
It's sort of like that thing I alluded to when I played that clip of Curtis last week, and I'd alluded to before, going back to, as we'll see with hypernormalization, the Vlad Surkov manipulation of the idea of creating this phenomenon of total suspicion around yourself as a public character. And Curtis, in that interview last week, he talked about, I mean, this thing with Trump swearing yesterday. Curtis last week was talking about people are leaning into playing the bad version of themselves because that reads as authenticity. You know, the example he used of like, you know, someone like Ricky Gervais, who, you know, is kind of politically incorrect, seen as being, you know, quite edgy. But you suspect he's also kind of a bit like that as well. And the Trump thing plays to that. And even perhaps the Mark Levin thing. I mean, he's always seemed like a vicious old sod. So in a way, perhaps it's unremarkable that he's going where he's going.
But but I've noticed, I mean, again, I don't want to get too conspiratorial, right? But I've noticed, right, it's very, very in your face, this anti-Israel rhetoric coming, you know, from these big accounts, lots of which I've never heard of, by the way. I will say that. But I've noticed that they're all kind of religious in flavor. They're kind of like, it's kind of like it's like a Jesus anti-Israel rather than classic, like this is not like TRS style, right? It's much more, it's kind of framed in a theological context. Often these people are Catholics. I'm just wondering, like, why is that? Why is that so prevalent now? And it's like they're not being cracked down on. They're not being banned. They're not
Is it trying to channel that thing from 1980, the Reagan religious right? You know, the way that sort of surge was,
as we saw in The Power of Nightmares, right?
Yeah, influential. That, you know, actually there is this massive base of, you know, people in Houston who want to take it to that level of it reminds me of something this morning. I was reading, you know, Pete North, you know, UK sort of political commentator, very thoughtful. Yeah, he can be a bit marmitey for people, but he was talking about parties being hollowed out at the moment and people needing to lean into a moral framework in order to really claim the ascendancy, and perhaps that is letting that moral framework in the US run with the kind of evangelicals. And letting that, I mean, who have been traditionally pro-Israel in the past, but now creating a sort of righteous objection in the way that Trump did yesterday. You know, both the sides are crazy. You know, they've been at it for years. We need to pull back and assert our own.
You're talking about you're suggesting somebody's trying to use...
Or at least let it run.
Someone's trying to give some help, I guess, or some voice to... a Christian opposition to Israel, you're talking.
But it feels like there's something about this that... I'm not suggesting all these people are AstroTurf, by the way. I'm just saying that it's really noticeable that it's just absolutely everywhere. And, I mean, again, like, you turn on Piers Morgan on any given day of the week, and he'll have people like this coming on, you know, and there are some very, very, I mean, he had that, there are some very, very prominent voices. It's not just Candice Owens. There are tons of these people. I haven't heard of most of them. You go on their Twitter profile and they've got like, you know, 500,000 million followers, you know, and they're banging this. And, you know, there's that guy, Jake Shield. I mean, I don't know half of these people. I don't follow them. But I see, like, what I've been doing recently is going on For You on Twitter as opposed to just the people I follow. So I'm seeing a lot more of this stuff and just noticing how big it is. And I don't know. I mean, some of the very copy pro-Trump types have long been suggested that Trump is actually just playing this really long game and is actually, like, trying to do in Netanyahu. You know, what do you think about that idea?
Well, that's the thing that Curtis alluded to in this documentary he did in the last week with Richard Osman and Marina Hyde. He said Trump is cosplaying old 1960s radicalism at times. And that reminded me of your contention in the sort of Boomer Truth Regime videos, that you have this sort of quantum state that oscillates between the sort of, you know, the stability, the conservative stability of the, you know, the 1950s office worker with the buzz cut, raising the family, you know, in the new suburbs, versus the countercultural kids who are kind of enjoying the fruits of the new safe bohemian playground that's being created. And that dialectic is what stabilizes the American polity. Yeah.
But then another thing I've noticed, right, is that on the other side of the debate, if you have a look at a lot of Judge Knapp's guests who are very anti-Israel, a lot of them, because I was sitting down with my dad when I went back, and you know, we were just kind of trying to figure out what was going on. We're like, well, let's watch some videos type thing. And we were watching Mia Shima, and he was like, hey, I don't know if I trust him, Mia Shima. And I was like, who else don't you trust? Ara Mate, Max Blumenthal. you see where he's thinking, right? But it's like it's very noticeable that a lot, Jeffrey Sachs is another one. A lot of Judge Knapp's guests are secular, liberal, and Jewish.
I'm pretty sure Mearsheimer's of German descent. I don't think Mearsheimer's.
Yeah, now I argued with him, my dad. I said that there's no actual evidence that Mearsheimer is. And he was he's got a German name. I don't think Mearsheimer is myself, but
no, I think he's German.
Let's say if we found out he was, would it surprise you? Because like it wouldn't surprise me that much.
I'm interested. No. Did he see like the other classic Knapp guests, like Ray McGovern and people like that? Did he have any?
Well, he's Catholic. Ray McGovern's Catholic. Yeah. Is Larry Johnson Catholic?
Don't know. Suspect not. Sounds like an Anglo-Prot name.
Yeah. It's interesting.
I really find the Judge Knapp crew really unimpressive. I've subscribed to him a couple of times and then just unsubscribe again because they don't say very much of interest. Like Judge Knapp himself, I don't mind, but Jeffrey Sachs is really boring. Never says anything interesting.
I like, of the Judge Knapp crew, I always listen to Alistair Crook.
Okay.
He's interesting, right? He's British former MI6 guy who's generally very interesting and who often says things that end up being true. Like I remember he was one of the people who was very instrumental in finding out that the Israelis were using AI to do bombings. If you remember, they were using some like algorithm. I McGregor, like if you watch McGregor on this, McGregor has become very, very frank and outspoken, and he is not taking any of the bull. Like, you know, a lot of what Trump has done has brought MAGA back in. It's brought a lot of people back who thought they were betrayed by Trump. Oh, you know, I never fell off. You should have trusted the plan and so on. McGregor's having none of it whatsoever, if you listen to him. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Yeah. And to be fair to the Knapp crew, you've got to remember, he's doing a show, what is it, nearly every day. So the kind of changes on the needle are going to be only very fractional. So right. Getting the commentators to come on and, you know, reveal some, you know, whizzy, radical new information.
I tell you, the experience of watching Judge Knapp with my dad was interesting, though, because he's very skeptical, I'll just say. And he just said, well, how does he know that? Where's he getting that bit of information from? And things like that. And it's like, once you watch a few of them, you notice that they all have the same talking points.
Yeah.
It's just how are they all on the same page straight away? So who's feeding them? Where are they getting their info from? It's a good question.
It almost seemed like a technique. I was watching the bit with Larry Johnson the other day, and no disrespect to him at all, but he's getting to be quite an elderly gentleman now with, you could see his memories maybe going a bit, and Knapp was kind of leading him a bit to sort of feed back Knapp's own lines to him, you know, that he'd already given him. So there seems to be a bit of an element of playing it, you know, on easy mode.
Presumably, Judge Knapp is Catholic as well, right?
No, you'd guess so with a name. Yeah.
But just about what you raised a few minutes ago, AA. I mean, you suggested that there may be deep state factions who are, in whatever practical way it manifests, are sort of favourable to a contra Zionist view, right?
Yes,
I think absolutely. There always has been. There is in Britain as well. It's famously in the Foreign Office. There's the Foreign Office was said to be dominated by Arabists for decades, right? In numbers. I mean, not to a man, but I think there always has been that faction in the deep state. Zionism is one point of view seen as extreme, even by a lot of the establishment. When it comes to politicians, it seems most of the politicians in Parliament and nearly the whole of the American Congress all praise Israel. In Britain it's changed because we've got so many Muslims now beginning to vote and get into Parliament and stuff, and it is changing somewhat. But Zionism is more partial. Like, Zionists will always, though, be very good at making their view seem default.
Sorry to cut across here.
No, go on.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I always refer back to things like Le Carré as a kind of, cultural marker of how this gets bedded in. But the notion there that in the struggle in his books, the Smiley books, is between a secret service divided between the kind of old, sort of slightly wet, left liberal characters that Smiley represents, sort of a moderate British establishment, and the Atlantic men in the secret service. Right. And in one of the books, of course, it gets taken over by an Atlantic man, the Secret Service, after, the mole gets blown and stuff. And, of course, the Atlantic man is called Saul, so it represents that vector of American interest.
But, speaking seriously a second, I've often wondered whether the hardcore Zionism, the Netanyahu style, right, of which somebody like Douglas Murray represents, is actually insurgent, right, which is why they are backing populists in all these places, right? So they're not, in some places, they're not actually, quote unquote, in power. They're actually trying to do a populist takeover, right, with figures like, a very good, who's that Dutch guy?
Geert Wilders.
Yeah, somebody like Wilders is basically a kind of, a kind of Zionist takeover of, of the mechanisms of the state type thing. So that would make sense why there are so many countervailing voices. If you think these things don't go on, they must do, right? They must do. There's also the other weird things, right? That Iranian professor from the University of Tehran, Mirandi, right? He's just given license to go on all of these massive channels and do endless interviews, right? And they just have him on and they don't try to shut it down and all that sort of stuff. It's just weird. It struck me more than once that it's weird. But anyway. I've talked earlier this week about stuff that I'm seeing up and down of my timeline, but it seems like there's been a green light. And now, there are so many voices who have historically held their punches or, kind of avoided this topic, are now piling in and are now...
Past AA go on. I have to ask, I wanted to, what are the sources your dad is looking at? Because you've mentioned, he's got quite pungent opinions of his own. I'm just curious as to where he's looking at for stuff. Is he looking at the Duran? Is he looking at
Don't forget, if you're in the diaspora, as my dad is, he'll have tons of friends. They're all on WhatsApp with each other. They share stuff. He'll have a ring from his cousin or something. So there'll be tons of information coming from all over the place. Mm. But my dad, bizarrely, is a big CNN watcher as well. But I've kind of never quite, but I think he watches CNN because he wants to know what the official line is. Yeah, you know, yeah. It's basically like watching American state propaganda is, or whatever the CIA wanted to know, is watching CNN. Mm. He also watches some Iranian sources, both official government ones and dissident ones that do the rounds. He gets information from all over the place. And he's a very big Google Images guy as well. He's always kind of looking at satellite images and things like that. So
is he mainly getting it from like Farsi language sources?
Some Farsi language, but yep. It's just like everyone else. He takes in a range of sources, but some of his sources are ones that we wouldn't necessarily have access to. And of course, he can just speak to people on the ground, see what the mood is. Like I've said before, a lot of people he would know are actually against the regime in Iran. So when they, about 6 months ago, 7 months ago, when they were coming back and saying like they've all turned pro Netanyahu over there, right? Mm. This is like the activist class because they were getting ready for this op, basically. It didn't happen. And now all of those people have turned against Israel for obvious reasons, right? For obvious reasons.
I just wanted to just relate into the point that you're making in the video as well, and what we mentioned a minute ago about the different factions in the state, which I think is totally true. I read the book Thatcher, the Honorary Jew by Robert Philpott, I think, a few years
right,
ago.
Okay, yeah.
But it's a totally pro-Jewish book and a pro-Thatcher book. The guy writes for the Jewish Chronicle. There's no doubts about his credentials or anything. And in that book, it describes, obviously, this is starting in 79 when she became prime minister. She was really, like, she was generally inclined to be pro-Israel, like, vaguely. But she really objected to having to treat with, like, even, you know, to talk to him at all, Menachem Begin, because obviously he had been the head of, I can't remember which of the militant groups it was, but obviously his group had murdered British people, servicemen and I think some civilians out there during their sort of war for independence. And she was the sort of person who would have listened. It's funny. People imagine her to be a complete servant, but it's not true.
Yeah.
She would have listened to stuff about the USS Liberty and, you know, the Sergeant's Affair and so on. She would have cared about stuff. And it was more recent then as well. She's described as someone who's just like a kind of a forerunner of the sort of slavish pro-Israeli and pro-Atlanticist views of now. But no, she argued with Reagan much more than you'd expect. She argued with Israel. She criticised Israel openly. She was extremely pro-Jews in Britain. That's a different matter. But on foreign policy, she was quite focused on, no, this is not good for Britain. These people have done things against Britain, talking about Israel, and things like this. The reason I mention it is it's since then, it's more from the 90s onwards that the practice of politicians in Britain and America and some other countries to present a nearly united pro-Israeli front. That's quite recent. That's the last 20 or 30 years. And I think it is really precarious. It's not deep institutionally.
I would also say, Horace, that even in British politics, you can generally tell who's on payroll and who isn't. Right, because they've all got a line they want to push on a particular day, right? And it's like, oh, why is Liz Truss coming out and saying this now?
I was thinking Liz Truss.
Yeah. Why is Jacob Rees-Mogg coming out and saying this now? You know, Priti Patel would be another one off the top of my head.
Conservative Friends of Israel is one thing that serves to coordinate everyone's messaging, right?
Yeah, and there's a Labour one as well. But like, I mean, I'll give you an example, right? Just before we came on air, I was listening to Tony Blair at Davos, where obviously the issue of Israel and what's just happened came up. And like he is, all right, now considering that Blair sits on the special advisory board of the ADL, you'd think that he would be like a very hardcore Zionist, but he's not. He was talking about a two-state solution. He was talking about the Palestinian people needing hope. He was talking about ways of getting Israelis out of this headspace that they're in at the moment. So it's not so clear. I mean, I've never believed that the control is total, which is why I've always preferred to think in terms of the factions, the techno globalists, or you know, of which Blair would definitely be more in that camp. Now I'm not saying he's anti-Zionist in terms of obviously he would protect Israel's right to exist and all of that sort of stuff. So he's not like an anti-Israel action or anything like that. But I'm just saying that his view is nuanced. His view is not this kind of like, it's not the view that you get from Ben Shapiro, as an example, you know?
Simon, were you going
I was just going to just add briefly, I just had a brief message from our friend, the Pastor Ozzy Marcus, who has just given me a snippet of something. He says, Menachem Begin was in Irgun, if I recall, and helped mastermind the King David Hotel bombing, 100 plus Brits killed.
Yeah, Irgun, yeah. They were proper, yeah, murderers. An enemy of Britain in the 40s, just plain and simple.
I mean, to the point, even Bill Clinton came out and counter-signaled Israel the other day. Did you see that? It was a clip that was doing the rounds. I'm just saying that, to me, you know, classic elite theory, I do believe that the current crop of hardcore Zionists are a rival castle, and that's why they fund a lot of populism, because they actually don't have total and complete control in the manner that some people believe. I just don't believe they have that. They want to increase that. And this is like Netanyahu's operation, right? It's his operation, but
yeah.
I think the Western powers are... I mean, there was talk of EU sticking sanctions on Israel if they don't stop their aggression against the Gazans. That came out yesterday. The EU has agreed that they're going to do something. So, you know.
Like, Zionists are always pissed off with the EU. I shouldn't even say Zionists, because what you're talking about here, I mean, Tony Blair might, in some circumstances, call himself a Zionist. But, yeah, it's like, departs from the liquid view, we could say.
Yeah, it's capital, it's little z versus capital Z, right? We're all of us are probably Zionists in so much as I have nothing against the state of Israel existing, right? Maybe you guys are different, I don't know. But it's like, I don't really object to being a country.
It's de facto a reality.
Right. Okay. But it's like there's a difference between that and being for the maximalist aims of Netanyahu or what he wants to do right now. Right. Whereas Ted Cruz, his support is absolutely unconditional. There's nothing Netanyahu can do that he would criticize in any single way. You know what I mean?
Have you got a read on how Cruz has done since his flaying by Tucker?
Badly. He's been getting crucified, and also that Mark Levin is currently feuding with Marjorie Taylor Greene, she's crucifying him. You know,
she was someone who, until the last couple of months, I would have, or even more recent, I would have said was a massive Zionist herself. I always thought she was, but she's rediscovered a degree of patriotism,
and she'd been somewhat on the outer as well. So it's kind of lifted her stock, hasn't it?
Right.
And Steve Bannon. I mean, I'd have always had Steve Bannon down as a hardcore Israel supporter, or even Alex Jones. These guys are all coming out pretty hard. So it's very interesting. Very interesting indeed.
This is something I just before we moved on, like maybe the chat can help out. We don't have to pause. But just who is it who has notably just in the last week or two turned against or started criticizing Israel, at least? I mean, you mentioned Matt Walsh, you mentioned Alex Jones.
If people Crowder. Crowder's another one.
And as you say, really milquetoast, like Crowder. He's like really safe and careful about what he says about anything. And he's criticizing what it means for America, right? Absolutely right. Absolutely as you should. I just wondered if people could chip in the chat maybe with other names, because I'm just interested by that.
Yeah, let's see who comes in as we play some more the Trump administration. Oh, there's another really prominent one, Horace, Robert Barnes.
Yeah, right? That was a surprise. Yeah.
And his mate, the People's Pundit, that guy, Barris, is it? Richard Barris.
Okay.
And people like, our buddy Aaron McIntyre, like it's really, 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 really obvious to see who's with them and who's not at this moment. And it's been very clarifying. Actually, in American politics, I would say that MAGA basically want like the America Firsters have dealt a massive blow in this past week to the Israel Firsters. And a lot of people say I'm delusional for saying that, or that, that all of this is theatre, or all of it is a kind of containment thing. I don't know, though, because if there hadn't been such a massive chimp out, basically, from the base, do you think Trump would have done what he's done and reversed course as quickly as he did?
Well, that raises another question, though. Why is Trump so bothered? I mean, he is in his last term. Why does he care so much about what his base thinks? A lot of politicians don't, right?
Because of J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance has massively been, because they're probably thinking, well, J.D. Vance is going to be the next president. And you see, this is another interesting thing, because we know that the people behind Vance are Peter Thiel, Palantir. Now, all of these people you'd say are Zionists, right? But are they Zionists like Tony Blair, or are they Zionists like Netanyahu?
And Trump did do that early counter signal against the idea of J.D. Vance being his appointed heir, didn't he?
Yeah, so it's very interesting where things are. And I wonder if basically what they want to do is get rid of Netanyahu's done so much bad stuff that maybe, like, optically for Israel, it might just be better to get rid of him and wrap up a lot of the bad stuff that's happened with him and just get a new government in and just be a bit more normal for a while. I don't know.
I suppose there's also his son, isn't there? There's also some hope that Barron will be a future president. So that's another factor, isn't it?
Do you know, I stumbled on something earlier on. Do you know there's this massive conspiracy theory, right? And when I say massive, there are videos with millions of views on this, right? That Barron Trump is secretly a time traveler. Have you come across this? There was a novel written in the early 20th century or late 19th century.
Oh, yes.
A series of novels featuring a character called Barron Trump, who was a time traveler. So there's this kind of whole rabbit hole where Donald Trump, you remember I made that video as a kind of thing, Donald Trump is a time lord. Apparently, like, that is actually a thing that people believe, that Trump has access to time travel. And the Barron is literally like Marty McFly or something. You know?
Yeah, I reckon there's another one of my mutuals alerted me. Yeah.
Oh, what? That it's true.
That this novel, the Barron Trump thing. Yeah.
I just want to give some credit to the chat. They named Mark Dice, the Hodge twins, then Bilzerian. I think he was a regular.
Yeah, who are the Hodge twins? They're massive on my For You. They're everywhere at the moment. Those guys, the Hodge twins. I don't know that. You see, this is the thing. I can no longer tell on the For You timeline who's a leftist and who's a rightist, because I don't know these people, right? So in my, like, I thought, well, the Hodge twins, they are they like Ash Sakar adjacent? I have no idea. This is the thing, you can't tell anymore. To cut ties. That's probably not going to happen, and I don't really see a future where America does kind of cut ties. But Israel's in a pretty dire situation right now. And I think you can actually see the disparity between the people jubilant, celebrating in the streets of Iran, with the, you know, and they're calling it a great victory, and the very somber tone of the Israelis. Why are they so somber? Because they thought, with their decapitation strikes in the first couple of days, with their sneak attack, with their Pearl Harbor attack on Iran, they thought that they could very quickly bring the Iranian government to its knees, cause a regime change, okay, and destroy the nuclear capabilities of Iran. They've actually failed in every single one of those aims. And counterintuitively, they have strengthened the mullahs. They've strengthened the government in Iran. How have they done that? Well, there's two ways. One, nationalist sentiment in the country. There's been a rally around the flag effect, as you're seeing, which has bolstered the government in quite a big way, because Iranians have banded together in a time of war because they were under attack. So that's the first thing that happened. The second thing that happened is that their assassinations, and it's turning out now, by the way, that some of the assassinations they claimed were not true. There's this one general who was at the celebration. They claimed he was dead. And in fact, his Wikipedia page had a death date. He was at these celebrations. That was wild, by the way. People were like, hey, there's that general. You said he was dead. So,
I will say, on, there's another funny thing that, you know, that the talking about regime change there, that quite cruel tweet towards Reza Shah Pahlavi the other day.
Yeah, how he
completely messed up.
Is that the one where it's a perfect profile shot of his toucan beak?
Dear, oh dear.
So I can't tell if they are artificially making his nose bigger or if his nose is really that
amazing.
Yeah. Every time I see it, it's like, are they just making it bigger and bigger every time? It's been one of my personal highlights is the merciless mocking of this guy by the kind of...
Actually, do you reckon he has to wear like a harness to keep it up or something? Or like a little scaffold under it?
It's a huge nose. It's a very big nose. But some Iranians do have big noses, you know.
So. Mm. There's actually, I just apropos of cultural trivia, there's a Gil Scott Heron song called Shah Mot, The Shah Is Dead. And he's got some lyrics in there. My name is What's Your Name? You may reject my claim, but I expect that you won't vary from the norm. Just a...
Even some of the assassinations they've claimed did not actually take place, which is kind of funny. But one of the effects of the attack on the decapitation strikes is that some of the old guard who were killed have actually been replaced with younger people who are more hardline. They're more militant, okay? And there's a dynamic in Iran whereby the clerics, the mullahs, the priest class, are seen as old and they're seen as overly cautious and not kind of militaristic enough. They're kind of very risk averse. Whereas there's a younger generation within the IRGC who are more militant, they are more martial, okay, and they are army men. And it has been widely reported in the Financial Times and elsewhere that this war massively accelerated this process because the Ayatollah basically seconded the whole thing to these younger militant guys within the IRGC who have grown in power as a result of the last 12 days. I should also mention that the Ayatollah, I forgot to mention it here because I was in full swing, but the Ayatollah has these plans to make his son the next Ayatollah, right? Talk about the end of monarchy, right? Mm. He wants to make, he's pulling an Oliver Cromwell, you know, Richard Cromwell. And the base of support, these young militant guys like the Ayatollah's son, like that's his base. So the Ayatollah, it wasn't by accident that he is empowering these more militant young guys, because that is his son's power base.
Just especially with, sorry, just a brief note update from our friend Marcus. Hodge twins were wave 1.5 or 2 Fresh Prince Blacks for Trump MAGA types pre-2016.
Right, oh, they're black, are they? I didn't know that.
Along with Crowder, Tommy Lauren, and the early Blaze.com types. They rabbit-holed big time post January the 6th and COVID and have gone anti-Zionist since then.
A Diamond and Silk still around, because they were like black.
One of them died, I think, actually. Diamond and Silk. I don't know which one, but yeah, they're probably just Diamond or just Silk now.
If it was Silk that died, they could get pearls in and carry on, you know.
Is what's the do you remember that black guy who was a MAGA guy who was just like he'd in the height of the culture wars, he'd be like sipping a Coke, laughing at SJWs and stuff. Is he still around? CJ Pearson or something? I wonder where he is on the Israel issue. I'm going to see if he's still around as I play this.
My favourite black guy on YouTube who was quite based was that guy T, but he just disappeared about 10 years ago. He was like a hardcore libertarian.
Yeah,
but libertarianism was sort of splitting at the time between left and right, and he just went straight for the right, and he was like as hardcore as anyone. He was like kind of, I don't know, like it was funny that he was black because he had the opinions of like a hard right-wing white man, but he was a good guy. Disappeared, stopped making videos.
So we could actually be seeing a newly strengthened, kind of more militant Iranian regime, who are now, ironically, despite what Trump is saying, hell-bent on their nuclear ambitions. Why wouldn't they be? The lesson that they've drawn, rightly, from this is that if you don't have a nuke, people will come and attack you, unlike in North Korea, as an example. So the Iranian parliament, just in the past couple of days, have had a vote on pulling out of the non-proliferation treaty. CJ Pearson, if you're wondering, I don't know if it's the same guy. I don't know if CJ Pearson, he is black, but I don't know if he's the kid who used to drink the Coke. But he is just a Trump loyalist. He's just a massive MAGA. Like, he is having a go at black pillars and all this sort of stuff today, right? So he is kind of... I heard a coinage on something I was watching earlier on. You know that you've got Trump derangement syndrome? There's also TLS, Trump loyalty syndrome. And, well, CJ Pearson's just a kind of MAGAite hardcore in that way. So whatever the MAGA line is his line, you know? And... pulling out of any of those kind of conventions that allowed the IAEA inspectors in, and the cooperation that they had with the IAEA. And the argument within Iran is like, well, look, we followed all the rules. We did all the things we were meant to do. We signed up to all these international conventions, and they still bloody came and attacked us, didn't they? The Israelis still snuck attacked us, and the Americans bombed us. Against all international law, etc., etc. So because of that, it has actually accelerated the drive, and it's strengthened basically the right within Iran. There's been a lurch to the right, to the hardline militant right in Iran, and also this shift from the cleric class, who, if you remember, your Julius Evola tend to be lunar and passive and, dare I say it, even feminine, to a more martial caste within Iran, who are basically represented by these young men in the IRGC, who are much more hawkish in all ways. So, yeah, it's paradoxically changed a lot of dynamics within Iranian domestic politics. Another thing is that this crown prince, this Reza Pahlavi, who was paraded around by Netanyahu and was, you know, people like Tuzi and so on were saying, oh, well, I'm going to be streaming from Tehran under the newly crowned Shah, blah, 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 all these Western kind of astroturfed protests. Well, his popularity within Iran has absolutely cratered. He is now widely unpopular. And the prospects of him coming in as the leader are done. They're completely done. The idea of him coming back was about a 30-year operation. It was about 30 years of time and effort that the Israelis and the Americans had put into bolstering a network of people, a counter-elite, if you want, ready to kind of lift into Iran in case of any sort of a regime change. None of that stuff's going to happen. I've got an update. The guy I was talking about is not CJ Pearson, but his name was Cousin T, right? And he has gone on to release a range of Cousin T products. If you have a look on his Twitter timeline, there he is shilling Cousin T's. There he is. Look, that's the kid. Remember, now he's become an entrepreneur, and likes Elon Musk, and there he is. You can have Cousin T's buttermilk pancakes.
Oh wow!
Keto pancakes by Cousin T. There he is. There he is. There, so he's, you know,
he's gone the George Foreman grill route, the Aunt Jemima's pancake mix route.
Yeah. And I don't know if he does political contact anymore because he's shilling, but like, yeah, he's selling. Oh, there he is. Kerence Tay Williams. There he is meeting Trump. There he is eating his, throwing out Aunt Jemima.
There's your New York guy.
there's the New York guy. I see where he is on this. There he is.
God, with the eagle, yeah. Man, fucking hell.
Seeing where he is on this, that's all. Yeah, okay. I mean,
just an update on what Simon.
Don't F with my president. Don't F with my president. MAGA is not dead. This is why I voted for him, etc. Okay, so carry on.
Oh, right. It's all loyalty to Trump himself, right? Just Simon, what you said this morning about Julia Hartley Brewer, you know, even her raising the question. I just I glanced at my YouTube feed, and all the news stories it was suggesting to me, like not that I subscribe to, but was all just Trump reacting against that, like furiously saying, "No, we totally obliterated their facilities."
Yeah,
which I'm sure he just won't be asked about again in a few months when those facilities start enriching again. You know. But.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very much the mainstream kind of view there, and they've said things recent days about, oh, though it looks like the uprising didn't happen.
Yeah, who'd have thought it?
And I also saw a lot of libtard media, like LBC and so on, focused mostly on the fact that he swore.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
And this was not presidential to swear. I mean, come on.
Statesman-like.
Yeah. But standing on points of propriety is always going to be a weakness of our media, isn't it? It's always that sensibility of what nice people believe.
I'm sure Sheila Fogarty never does anything wrong.
She'd just shoot them.
Exactly. That's how she's doing. But I can't remember what I was going to say. Sorry, Karen.
So ever.
Oh, have we finished?
The only thing I will say is that as of the recording of this, I've still not seen the Ayatollah make a statement, and he hasn't kind of come. You can't hear it?
No, I can hear it.
I can hear it.
That's fine.
Come out. Sorry. Maybe he's worried about being assassinated, or maybe something. I don't know. We haven't seen the Ayatollah. He has been conspicuous by his absence so far, but certainly the Iranians are feeling emboldened by all of this. And they're celebrating a victory. The Israelis are looking pretty somber. And in the American political context, all of the neocons, the Mark Levins, the Laura Loomers, the Lindsey Grahams and so on, they're moaning, they're angry, they feel betrayed. Can I just mention something, right? I mentioned Laura Loomer there. I'm a mutual with Milo on Twitter. He likes me for some reason. I've never actually met him, but we were on election night on Lotus Eaters. I didn't talk to him, but, you know, I don't know. He's been a mutual of mine for a while. And he is running a really bizarre campaign at the moment, trying to prove that Laura Loomer is not actually Jewish. And he's posting, like, evidence that, like, Laura Loomer, doesn't know, like, basic stuff about Judaism, can't identify the Star of David, grew up eating bacon, like that she's like not. And I was like, what is this bizarre thing? And Milo is claiming that at some point in her like career she decided to quote unquote become Jewish and whatnot, but he's claiming that she's not really. I don't know what he's doing. I don't know if that's true or
there's no love lost between them. She's been a sort of kind of stone in his shoe since he kind of since he became a thing, and but since he made his kind of recent comeback as well, I think she's kind of the sort of the his major harasser.
Right. So he's got personal, but like it's a very weird strategy. Why is he going on about this so much?
Oh, just to upset her, I imagine.
You know, just trying to prove that she's not actually who she says she is, and he's actually dedicated his account to this. Wow. If you have a look, it's just like,
debunking her.
Look, Loomer. With... oh,
and Milo it's too. Just, this time it's personal.
Yeah, it's kind of it's kind of interesting because he's just like, look, there's Laura Loomer failing to identify the star. And just look, this guy. I was there the day that Laura Loomer decided she was Jewish. She was 24, knew nothing about Judaism. Her mother was a British-born Christian. She bought a $30 Star of David necklace from Amazon. And I just, like, I don't know if any of this stuff is true, but it's really amusing. I don't know why. It's just, like, really funny stuff.
That seems to be Milo's kind of disruptive MO. You know, it doesn't really matter whether it's true or not. You know, it's just wounding your enemy at the moment you're choosing.
I'm just saying it's funny. It's just really funny. I don't know why Horus is probably rebooting.
He's reconnecting, yeah.
They've been blue balled, basically. And really, the kind of whole Israel first thing within America has taken a real massive setback by the actions of Trump. Sorry, it's Jess. I just been...
Oh, man.
Whether he planned this all along or whether he reacted to events and in a more impulsive way, very difficult to say. I think that some of those people who were saying, oh, you know, you should have trusted the plan all along, it's probably cope, to be honest. I feel like Trump saw how things were going and then kind of has reacted to loud voices in his base and reacted to the reality. It kind of dawned on him, maybe the meeting with Steve Bannon, I don't know. But it looks, I mean, to give the devil his due, it looks like this whole US bomb raid.
What else have we got?
Oh, man. It's so cruel. So cruel.
But that's what he does.
Kabuki theater, you know, strike and retaliation on the US air base by Iran. It looks like it was kind of coordinated, a little bit like the whole deal with the Soleimani thing before. So that must have had some degree of planning. He's claiming, Milo is, that Laura Loomer got a nose job to look more. She's only living the dreams of who was that woman? The Unchosen book, Judy Burchill.
Oh yeah,
like actually living out the Judy Burchill dream. Have you heard this, Horace? This campaign of Milo's to try to prove that Laura Loomer's faking being Jewish.
She so is.
She is.
I haven't seen that. Yeah. she so is Jewish. I mean. I see him doing the similar with Lauren Southern a few months ago. Not about that, but about just gets like obsessed with destroying someone's reputation. But speaking of him and Laura Loomer as well, you mentioned earlier that like it has been sort of a necessity for Zionists to somewhat capture populist energy, right? I mean, right wing populist energy, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, those are two figures. Both Milo and Loomer were early in the sort of MAGA thing, weren't they? So it's 2015, 2016. They were both, and Laura Loomer in particular tried to infiltrate like the alt-right. Well, I don't know, infiltrate, but join up with the alt-right, knowing that she was hanging around with loads of Nazis and stuff. But still just going to their events and trying to like seduce guys. Well, I've seen her on camera, like both, I don't know, like sort of seducing someone. It's funny. Like, but yeah, she seems to epitomize that. She's like, yeah, we need to make this a Zionist thing, basically. And she always has. Well, she's even worked with Nick Fuentes, hasn't she? Who's like, you know, famous. Anti-Semite, so-called. But yeah, Milo Yiannopoulos is like, I mean, does he refer to himself as Jewish? Like he has done in the past, but then he's like all over the place. He's
now Christian, isn't he? He's now...
Oh, right. Yeah. Has he given up the gay marriage thing? Right,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because he did marry a black man, you know.
There's always going to be that layer of distance with Milo, isn't there? You know, he is kind of a performance artist in his own way, you know, irrespective of his... history, if you like, in political terms, he's always going to play with these things and leave you in a bit of doubt. But again, it's in that cultural territory of, you know, you talk about populism there, again, feeding in a little bit of Curtis stuff again. You've got Curtis saying this idea that liberalism has kind of forged this dead end of unbelief in anything. But that also means it can't conceive of any kind of future. And of course, populist energy, which he identifies with people like Trump, rushes in to kind of, you know, get some political traction, but you know, it doesn't ever lead anywhere meaningful.
Milo to me will always be just a journalist from the Catholic Herald. That's what the first time I ever heard of him was he was a writer for the Catholic Herald, and he was quite a good journalist as well.
Well, he was a Breitbart guy. He's actually like a decent writer
before that. Did great stuff on Gamergate at Breitbart, didn't he? I mean, even further back, a few years before that, he was a Catholic Herald writer. And he was conservative, ostensibly.
Ended up
marrying a guy.
I mean, I will say that he kind of tunnels people, and that they're generally quite entertaining because due to the unexpected angles he comes from. I mean, ways of attacking Laura Loomer by trying to disprove that she's Jewish. It's just such a bizarre angle. Anyway, let's carry on.
I think if you take his zeal as comic, it is amusing.
Gone into it. And Trump is actually putting the Israelis in a difficult scenario now because he's insisting that the nuclear capability is destroyed. He is being counter-signaled by the media, by CNN, and by leaks in US intelligence suggesting otherwise, okay? But he is insisting, so in the kayfabe of MAGA, in the kayfabe of the US administration, right, the official US government line, is that the nuclear capability is destroyed. This is a very interesting development, and I don't know how that's going to play out. As I said yesterday, I don't think Netanyahu's ever going to give up if he's allowed to stay in power. But maybe a chain of events now has been set off where we could be seeing the beginning of the end of Netanyahu. It really depends on if Trump really distances himself from him now, or whether, as has often happened in the past, he somehow finds a way to get folded back in. But certainly at the...
What do you guys think on that front? I mean, do you think it's just outrageous cope to think that Trump may finally actually just stick the knife into Netanyahu now, or is it
staging? As I was listening to a radio caller yesterday, is it staging for Trump to do another kind of mediation, you know, peace deal, go for his Nobel Prize?
Honestly, I don't know. What do you think, Horace?
I just think the odds of him. I mean, yeah. Netanyahu himself is more a problem than the relationship with Israel, and like quite precarious. But I think whoever it is that urges Trump to act for Israel, or at least for Likud, will also try and get him to lay off Netanyahu in all circumstances, because Netanyahu is important at least to Likud and that faction of Zionism. So I think probably not, unfortunately.
At the moment, they've taken an almighty L. It's just a flat loss for Israel, and like I said, by all accounts, if the war had carried on another week, 10 days, Israel would have completely run out of weapons. And this is not coming from Iranian media or pro-Iranian sources. This is coming from spokespeople within the Israeli government. Their interior minister, I forget his name now. Basically came out and said all of this, and they said they massively underestimated the total number of missiles that Iran had, and they massively overestimated their own defensive capabilities. So what is the lesson of this? It was a failed...
I think about a week ago you said that also initially it seemed that Israel's defense against Iranian rockets was something like 90% effective, and then was later shown to be more like 50%, or like it's actually declining in effectiveness.
So there's two reasons for that. One is that Israel are running out of their anti-air, but also because Iran staggered, they held back their best stuff, which the Israelis just can't, the hypersonics and so on, and that the more modern ballistics for, you know, the second week. So the first, like, they lobbed a lot of stuff at them to start with the design of them using up their ammo, basically using up their, because for every one Iran fire, Israel have to use two to shoot them down of the anti-airs. And I mean, I read somewhere there are only 3,000
I can't remember what they're called now. Patriot, is it? The anti-air missile. Right. There are only like 3,000 in the entire world. The estimates of Iranian missile stock could be over 10,000, right? They could be even over 30,000. And of course, the timeline to replace those, to actually manufacture one of those anti-airs, apparently they take about 2 years to make. And they've depleted a pile of them in Ukraine. The Americans have. Mm. So Iran can actually replace their stock quicker than the Americans can, mainly due to their relationship with North Korea, who have an absolutely metric fuck ton of these wow. missiles. Mm. They've just been stockpiling them. Yeah.
So maybe you addressed this in the video, but like, do you reckon that's the main reason why Israel was up for a ceasefire? I mean, as I understand asked for a ceasefire.
100%, 100%. If they didn't, it was they had about a week left. And also, you know, that guy Ben-Gvir we were talking about. Do you remember I mentioned the head of Mossad who is rumored to be dead, or nobody's seen him? I mean, one of the last times he was seen was arguing with Ben-Gvir. This footage was doing the round. Let me just show you this footage here. Right, to put this into context, that's Ben-Gvir arguing with the head of Mossad, saying, why did you anger Iran? Why did you provoke Iran? And I didn't know Iran had such missile capabilities, right? Wow. I mean, it's just crazy can you imagine the head of the CIA arguing with, who's that guy that Trump's got with him now? Forget his name, the young guy who used to be in the platoons and all that.
Pete Hegseth.
Yeah, can you imagine Pete Hegseth literally arguing with the head of the CIA in that manner? You know,
or like Ben Wallace arguing with... the head of MI6 now.
By Israel.
You know, the old defense.
Israel saw an opportunity. Or David Lammy. I mean, all throughout this, one of the tragedies has been every once in a while I tweet out breaking David Lammy is monitoring the situation. But that is actually based on real reports. That every once in a while the BBC are like, David Lammy is all across this. He's monitoring the situation. He's working with people to try to diffuse things.
That reminds me of the bit in The Thick of It, the Christmas specials in The Thick of It, where they got a stand-in minister because the other one's on holiday, and some crisis erupts in the middle of the night while he's busy trying to arrange a new leader because the leader just quit. And he goes, can you just ring the press and tell them I'm like across that and involved in every aspect of the thing, and then he just walks off. Like, he doesn't even know what the issue is. That is Lammy, because Lammy's too thick.
Apparently that video was old, by the way, but that was the one that was doing the round. Still, it's still incredible that even that argument took place, even if it was 3 years ago, it was still incredible that it happened. Anyway, let's carry on. Yeah. See, they thought, this is our moment. They'd planned for this kind of first day decapitation strike thing. But it didn't go to plan, right? They carried out the initial success attack was a success. What they weren't counting on was the massive retaliation. What they were not counting on was the fact that Iran had contingency plans in place to replace all of those people who were decapitated in the first place. What they were not counting on was the strength of the Iranian retaliation. And what they were counting on was the idea of dragging America into the war and basically fighting this war on its behalf. All of those gambits failed. It all failed. It's blown up in Netanyahu's face. And he is probably going to be facing questions from his own public soon, those ones who have left or have not been allowed to leave. Because like I said at the start of the video, there's been a mass exodus. That's the information that I've seen. Also, because the war is ostensibly over, they are actually calling it the 12-day war. It's not actually technically a ceasefire because they haven't signed anything. They've just agreed to stop attacking each other. So that one little technicality is important, I guess. So it's not a conventional ceasefire.
But they are, as things stand, the ceasefire seems to be holding. What has started to happen, though, is that because there was a complete blackout in Iran, where the internet was closed off and people weren't able to ring each other, now people are starting to ring each other, and people within Iran who have diaspora family elsewhere are starting to ring each other and basically explain what the hell has happened, because it's been, like I said, there's been a blackout in both countries, okay? And some of the early things that have come out is that the Israelis were actually a lot less strategic than they've claimed, and were actually bombing residential areas willy-nilly. So this is like what people are telling each other. How do they know? They're like, well, the area behind my house, nothing's there apart from, you know, it's just a residential area where people live, but they flattened that area, okay? Now, what that could be is that, I don't know, maybe a nuclear scientist lived there, but Israeli doctrine is like not to surgically take it out, but just flatten it and hope that you kill the guy and his family or something like that, you know?
Like when they do, like when America does drone attacks on a whole wedding to take out one Islamic militant or something.
Something like that, yeah. So these are the sorts of things coming out now, which means that after the initial success in the decapitation strikes in the first couple of days, which were very targeted, which were very well planned, it looks like the Israelis panicked a little bit in their subsequent retaliations against Iran, because they were kind of much more scattershot in what they were hitting and what they were trying to do after that, whereas the Iranian strikes were actually all on either military targets, Mossad targets. Sorry, I've just got Milo's page, Simon. People have been accusing Laura Loomer of rape for over a decade. That's just crazy. It's all on strategic kind of resource locations. So all of this information is coming out, and obviously, as time goes on, in the fullness of time, we'll probably learn more and more. That goes on both sides. I imagine in Israel, there are people who are not very happy with the Netanyahu government who will be getting this sort of info out too. There'll be also, like, there'll be other people on the ground who will probably be able to kind of explain the extent of the damage there. But a lot of the things I told you have actually come directly from Israeli sources. Official Israeli sources. That's why they signed the ceasefire. If they didn't sign the ceasefire, they needed a timeout, basically. They needed to refill their resources. Now, from the Iranian point of view, I maintain that it was a mistake for Iran to go for the ceasefire, because they could have basically just finished them off, to finish the job. Why not? I'm always reminded of Carlito's Way. Benny Blanco from the Bronx, you had him on the ropes. Finish the job. Otherwise, Benny Blanco from the Bronx has a habit of coming back. And, you know, maybe, I mean, if I was to say, is this the end of this? It is not the end of this, especially as long as Netanyahu is in there. But even beyond Netanyahu, and this is a dynamic in both countries, right? Netanyahu within Israeli politics, believe it or not, is actually a moderating voice. There are voices further to his right who are more militant. And as I just explained, the same dynamic exists in Iran, where the Ayatollah and the clerics are actually more moderate, are actually more cautious than some of the IRGC, who are more militant and are more martial in their thinking. So it could actually cause an acceleration.
Just to add to that, Netanyahu is also, as this seems to happen in a few countries, Netanyahu is constantly under the threat of going to prison as well. I think for real crime, I think he has actually done wrong. But also, obviously, his enemies are going after him. Yeah, he's constantly, and obviously staying in the position of prime minister when you've already been convicted of stuff, which I think he has, is sometimes the best way to just keep yourself out of prison. The same happens in Brazil and Argentina, I understand, and probably lots of other countries.
There's another pressure. This new mayor of New York, like, he's not the mayor yet. He's just won the Democratic primary. But if this guy becomes the mayor, he believes that Netanyahu should be arrested, right?
In America.
Right. The New York, the guy who's probably going to become the New York mayor thinks the Netanyahu should be arrested. Now, if Netanyahu wants to go to the UN, he has to go to New York, right? And he goes to New York fairly regularly. Could see the bizarre scenario of the New York mayor trying to arrest the president of the prime minister of Israel. Could actually happen.
So you could see the New York police dive in to try and arrest him, and then maybe like state cops who are under the governor of New York then stop them doing so.
Or the federal police or something.
And then ICE get involved as well, and then people start protesting against ICE as well.
Just had a brief update from Marcus in Australia. He says Trump has just said he's not interested in restarting negotiations with Iran. I don't think it's necessary. And just looking at BBC News front page, everything has kind of fallen away about this story. Israel and Iran were both satisfied to go home and get out, says Trump.
Well, they're definitely going to, the Iranians are definitely just going to resume enriching when they can, right? And I know it's not actually to build weapons, probably, but this issue just comes back in a few months,
The story that they've elevated above all this is actually Trump talking about the NATO defense spend going up to 5% of GDP, which is a big win for the US and the West. And Netanyahu is pushed further down the page, saying the nuclear plans of Iran have been set back, quote, many years.
Which means if he's saying that, it means that they need like 2 years to regroup, basically. and I think that's pretty much it for this video as well. I will say that back on Milo is now tweeting up a storm in real time. He says there's no point turning Laura down. She'll tell everyone you had sex either way. If you are a Republican with even the slightest public profile, I guarantee you that Laura Loomer has told a dozen people that she has slept with you. And then he's just like relentlessly carrying on. Laura Loomer raised hundreds and thousands of dollars from Trump supporters for lawsuits that were never filed. Laura Loomer has threatened to commit suicide hundreds of times over the past decades. And there he's like actually sharing some of this stuff. Laura has unusual taste in fancy dress for a public defender of Israel. Never before seen in history. The nose job, basically, that Laura Loomer had. I don't know if any of this stuff is true, by the way, but it's just kind of mental that he's just hammering tongs all day and every day.
Just for the sake of lols, if anyone's really enjoying that, see what he did. Like, just do a search for him talking about Lauren Southern as well, maybe about 6 or 8 months ago. It was disgusting, the stuff he was writing, but it was actually quite funny as well. When he gets it in for someone, he fucking goes hard.
I suspect those are AI images that you shared, are they? Or are they real?
She definitely has had plastic surgery. I've seen before and after pictures and stuff. Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay. Okay, then.
But it could be, still could be fake pictures. So.
Well, you know, going for a woman's vanity is the sharpest knife. Yeah.
Any final thoughts on this before we hit the super chats? What do you think is going to happen in the near term? Do you guys reckon?
I'm holding out on the 3-day rule here. I'm still confused. Where does it go? I don't know. After Trump yesterday, let's see how it shakes out.
Boris, your thoughts?
Well, I reckon this could be Zionism falling over in America. Like, I mean, they need to keep controlling the American Congress and presidency, and they're just making that harder for themselves all the time by the extreme and sort of desperado way that they conduct themselves. And I don't see how they can continue to even maintain or let alone increase the power that they need in America, in London, you know, in order to do that. I think they're really screwing it up. They're reducing themselves to just a reasonably short and getting shorter list of maniacs. You know, Laura Loomer is generally regarded as a maniac. So is Levin. So is, you know, most of the others. Ben Shapiro, I know he's got a big audience, but it's just, you're not going to gain any new followers with what you're doing. Like, everyone just hates you. It's just so obviously un-American as well. So obviously contrary to American interests. But Sorry, were you going to say something? Oh, okay. You're on mute, AA. I don't know if you mean to. You're on mute again. There you go.
Hello? Can you hear me? All right. My screen froze for some reason. Just on Laura Loomer, Tucker Carlson started going at her as well the other day, and he was calling her a creepy, and like, who is Laura Loomer? Who is this creepy person? Yeah, and how has she become so close to the Trump admin? Like, who appointed her as the spokesperson for Trump? All of these sorts of questions, because she's generally not that well liked.
She doesn't endear herself. My only question really is to AA is, so as I say, 3-day rule, but in your view, has Trump managed to pull this back in terms of?
I think he's done the political equivalent of a Houdini act.
Yeah.
He's like, I mean, he's got everybody, all his base back on board, and he's got a lot of people to believe he's on their side again. My view remains that until he definitively proves that, it still, to me, looks like he's in the pocket of Netanyahu. He needs to absolutely prove that he's not by truly cutting the cord, doing him in. That would be the only way to prove to me. Because otherwise, it just all smacks of op, basically. This was just a way of Israel getting out of the war, basically. So,
The thing that we haven't covered here that I think probably does deserve a mention is just Russia and China. I don't follow the news myself. I follow the Iran and a couple of other things like that. So I do get a bit of that third worldist kind of view. But like what, not third world, a BRICS, pro-BRICS kind of view. But Russia, as I understand it, they have offered Iran, is this correct? They've offered Iran to come under their nuclear umbrella before, and the Iranians have declined because they don't trust Russia.
Yes, that's what I've heard as well.
So, and then China, people keep saying China is strongly, vehemently opposed to Iran closing the Straits of Hormuz. And also that because they depend on the oil more than anyone else that's shipped out.
Yes.
And also that Russia and China, this is what I think Alex Mercouris said, that Russia and China both strongly support the non-proliferation agenda. And obviously, for that reason, and maybe others, they also don't want Iran to have nukes. And that's why they've offered them these alternatives. So they support them, they give them military technology and stuff, but not to the effect of building nuclear weapons. I don't know what comes from that, but just do you think that does that make any difference to you? The fact that Russia and China are not encouraging them to get nukes. They are friendly with them. But they also want Iran to find some sort of non-nuke peaceful solution out of this as well, don't they?
Yeah, I think, it's hard to know how much is, because you've got to remember that all three of these countries, Iran, Russia and China, no longer take anything that America says or does seriously. No longer trusts America as an actor, right? So I think they've given up necessarily being transparent with the Americans. I know there was this massive beef the other day between Medvedev and Trump, where Medvedev was saying that countries are going to give Iran nuclear warheads. Now, if you remember the to come back to Adam Curtis, Simon, the strategic ambiguity, right? Putin always gives Medvedev license to kind of give like the most nutty, to kind of play games, in the headspace of the West. Mm. It's kind of hard to know with the Russians. I would say that I did read that the Iranians have agreed to work a bit more closely with the Russians in the past. I think like in the day before the ceasefire or something, they had a meeting, and it was very noticeable that they met with the Russians the day before the ceasefire. So clearly some sort of deal was done there. What exactly remains to be seen,
And also, does all that's happened in the last sort of 12 or 14 days affect how the US negotiates, well, and how anyone negotiates with Russia vis-a-vis Ukraine as well? Because, aren't we supposed to be in the midst of negotiations?
The thing is that my understanding is during the 12-day war, the Russians have actually been going hell for the leather against the Ukrainians. And last I hear, we're actually going to make a push for Kiev.
From the Iran anyway, it sounds like Russia's having a really good time the last 2 weeks. Yeah,
They are advancing on all fronts. They're taking land that they, you know, yeah. So, I mean, like, Ukraine's position is deteriorating whilst the people who are supposed to be negotiating for them and supplying them are busy with Israel, you know. So, I don't know. It just suggests that Russia's position is improving just by doing nothing, just by, well, not by doing nothing, but just carrying on fighting.
Yeah, and also Trump signaled that he was going to go back to thinking about Russia. If you remember, he said that thing because Putin called him. They had a conversation, and apparently during that conversation, Trump said, look, my biggest problem isn't Iran, it's you. So that was kind of a signal that we're going to go back to thinking about Ukraine for a while. And I've noticed the Rat King is back in the headlines too. So it's like, right, without skipping a beat, we're going to go from Middle East back to Ukraine for a while.
Say, this whole intervention has also lent a bit of weight to the kind of, when this comes out in the kind of Murdoch press outlets here, where they've always got kind of ex-military intelligence experts coming on to sort of bolster the case for hawkishness. And I see there was some article in the last day or two about Starmer saying the UK is having to prepare for a sort of possible war mindset in the near future, and this is partly about? Being driven. I think it was an article in The Independent from the last couple of days.
I saw a headline, but what was that?
Essentially, it was using little bits of this Iran conflict to sort of, suggest that, Iran will, people have been talking about pushing forward with, sort of possible terrorist acts and so on. And some of these ex-military types were talking about, suicide bombing and stuff. And I thought, that doesn't seem like Iranian style quite so much. And they've also linked the Palestine Action Group, which has just been prescribed for damaging British aircraft, as terrorists, as they rightly are, but also suggesting they were funded by Iranian proxies.
Yeah, right.
Yes, yeah, kind of bizarre and alarming that Starmer wants to put us on a war footing. And I keep on asking, I've asked like two times on Twitter, against who? And then all the replies are against all of you, by which he means the British public, right?
Yeah. I can't help thinking of the Dad's Army theme at this point, that's all.
People talk about regime change, hoping for regime change in Iran. I just think they're nowhere near that. Like, it might be a crap regime, but it's not as weak as they imagine.
No.
We do need regime. If it's legal to say this, we do need regime change in some other influential countries in the world.
Well, just to go into a bit of a slop domestic politics for a while. There's a lot of talk about the Labour government possibly collapsing in the next week because there's a massive Labour backlash against these benefits cuts they want to do. Mm-hmm. And if Starmer could face a rebellion, and often when there's a major scale rebellion, it brings down a government because there'll be a vote of no confidence if they go against the whip. Mm. I think Starmer's mad enough that he wouldn't resign in those circumstances. But typically, historically, if you suffer a major, major backbench rebellion, it can bring down a government. So I think it's wishful thinking from right wingers personally, but,
Only about 120-odd Labour MPs have said they'll vote against it at the moment.
So he can still get a majority through, and he possibly even use Tory votes to do it. Mm. There have been a few super chats and things, which we should probably read. Port Film Co-op says, don't get too sucked into the idea that Trump is going to do right by us. We know why. Oh, we did that. I did that one yesterday. Studio Arena says, you missed a bunch of super chats last stream. Yes, Studio Arena. Tomorrow I will do regular office hours where I'm going to catch up on all of the stuff I've missed. Okay. Port Film Co-op says, accent challenge for AA. Can you do your dad's accent? Hmm. Well, this is one of those very strange things that I was about 28 or something before I even realized that my dad had an accent. because it's like your own dad, it never quite occurs to you that he's got an accent. Like, it just sounds like my dad's voice. So it just never occurred to me that he has one. But he does have one, obviously. But I can't do it. I can't really do an impression of my dad, unfortunately.
Do you sound like your father? Because that's what I find as I get older.
Not really. Not really. Let me see.
My dad's from Wales, and I never thought he had an accent, and all my friends were like, what? He's the Welshest person ever.
Yeah. What does that mean? My dad shouts a lot. He's very loud. My mother always says he's got a bell in every tooth, my mother says. Let me see, how would he do it?
Nima, donkey would have learned by now. Close the door. I don't know. Like, it's kind of what he's like.
Shouty dad, yeah.
Yeah. Come on, dinner's ready. Studio Rayner says, I thought you said you'd put the woke away. What's that in reference to? Studio Rayner says, the past is dead and gone. If your goal is to return to the past, then your goal is dead. Well, I didn't say my goal is to return to the 90s. I'm just saying that my basic sensibilities are still basically the same as I was when I was 20. Despite all of the stuff I've read, it's like you, I don't know, you're basically formed. You're basically fully formed by the age of 21, aren't you? So it's kind of, Port Film Co-op says, Simon accent challenge, French Adam Curtis.
Can I do this next week, please?
It's fair enough to have, to have a week of practice is completely fair.
I need to actors need to lean into these things properly. You can't just do it like a performing dog. You've got to study.
How do you say fantasy in French?
That's probably fantasy or something like that.
Piotr says, Darth Blair's thoughts on the current thing. Should you be interested? I actually watched that already because somebody sent it to me. So, yeah, I was always interested in listening to Blair, of course. I mean, all of Blair's answers are extremely milquetoast, to be honest, in that interview. Port Film Co-op says, TRS theorized that eventually would have kosher anti-Semitism, and that might be what's going on. It's hardly challenging to the actual power structure. If you want the real deal, watch TRS or Fuentes or Warstrike. And he also says, Horus accent challenge. Michael Caine noticing the changing demographics in his neighborhood. Oh my god,
maybe for next week. What Michael, are we talking young or old Michael Caine? Old is easier.
Or was that film Jack, what was that film he did, John Brown, what was that film?
Harry Brown.
Sam 153 says Trump became George W. Bush, then he's not. World War III was close, now it's the status quo. MAGA was about to founder, now it's not. Nothing sticks with Trump. I assume the news cycle will change next week and people will forget. Well, thank you very much, Sam 153. It means so much. Yeah, people do forget. For example, who is still talking about Liberation Day? Do you remember Liberation Day? America as we know it is going to change forever. Globalism is dead. What happened to that? All bollocks, wasn't it?
It's like you said about Brexit.
Yeah, exactly. And Enrico Palazzo says, promo code Scorcher. Studio Rayner says, but have you even been to Iran? 2003 was the last time I was there. I've only been twice in my adult life. Although as a kid, I was there. Yeah,
may I ask a question about Iran? I've seen pictures. I mean, they're the best, you know, brilliant photography, but I've seen pictures of these amazing stained glass windows in mosques. Is that worth visiting in Iran? Have you been to those?
Yeah, a lot of the coolest stuff is in a city called Isfahan, which is a stunning place, really nice place, and it has a lot of that architecture there. There's a lot of nice places, and when I went, I did travel around. I went to a few. I went to the Holy Shrine of Reza. There's a town called Qum, is it? One of the places we stayed was in one of the Shah's former palaces, which is now a hotel. That was cool. That was cool because it hasn't changed from the 60s. And it was like staying in a James Bond movie because it had, like, if you could imagine, like, all of the mid-century wood and all of the, like, the little switches and old casino tables and stuff. That was cool. I wish I could go back there.
Do you see the swastika in Iran at all? Asian countries, you do.
I did meet a guy who basically told me he was a Nazi.
Old buildings and stuff.
I didn't see any swastikas, but I did. A guy within the first 5 minutes was like, "Yeah, I'm a Nazi. I like Hitler." I was like, "What?" And back then I was just like a 22-year-old. I was like, "Yeah, what?" That was interesting. Martin Creer says, I usually dismissive of the base Zuma trope, but I have noticed an instinctual bigotry in myself and some peers that I don't enold. Yeah, and this is what I'm talking about, basically, is that there's always a level of distance between
I don't know, your intellectual positions and like the authentic self, if that makes any sense. Mm. And what I was saying to Simon earlier is that my basic default self is still like in my daily life, in my attitudes towards people and so on. Mm. I'm basically just the same, you know.
It's very much of the time. I remember Andrew Breitbart being interviewed when he sort of came out of university in LA, and he said, you know, you just come out as a default liberal. It's when you're the child of your time.
Whereas some Zoomers are not default liberals. Mm. I honestly think, I mean, don't take this the wrong way. Mm. It's almost like Zoomers are just too retarded to be anything else. They just end up like going full hog for this ideology or that ideology. But I also noticed that they also do like, less so these days, but a couple of years back, it was like every 6 weeks. Oh, I thought you were Catholic, mate. Oh no, now I'm a hardcore Orthodox Christian. I was like, when did that happen? Now I'm a Aryan pagan. What? So you had that sort of thing where you get like ridiculous, massive ideological conversions every 6 months, which I've always been a little bit skeptical of. Studio Rainer says, what is American culture? Burgers, hot dogs, big open road, rock and roll. Am I offending anyone? I think this is Hollywood movies.
Big wide cars.
Things being massive.
Big boobs.
I stayed in this place, this motel place, called the Big Texan or something, where everything was absolutely massive and you could just eat unlimited food. I remember I had sweetbreads and unlimited. You know that show, like Man versus Food? I think he went there once. And they do this challenge where how much can you eat in the space of 1 hour type thing. And they just keep on bringing it. I didn't do it. I just had a normal steak and sweetbreads. But there were people doing it. Everything was just huge in that place. That was
big
in...
big meals, right? Big steaks.
That was in... what's the name of that town where that is? What are some towns in Texas, people?
Houston.
It wasn't one of the big ones. It was
Galveston.
What was that bloody place called?
El Paso.
Big Texan motel. Amarillo, right? And I've told this story before because we were doing Route 66. We were only there for a day, right? So we were staying in this place, the Big Texan in Amarillo. And I went down. I was like, look, we're only here a day. We'll take a look around Amarillo. What's there to do in Amarillo? There's nothing to do in Amarillo, sir. You should go back to your room. I want to kind of see it. I want to have a look around. Seriously, there's nothing there, sir. You should go to the pool and have fun. So that was, I'll never forget that. So, Maximus Aquila says, question for the panel. Are any of you going to the WITAN and finally in a position to go this year? It would be nice to meet you all. You guys going to the WITAN?
Not at present. Things could change.
Taurus?
No, a bit pricey for me. No, I'd like to. Maybe next year.
Base Future says, is the Dutch angle on your webcam shot deliberate? No, I basically set it. I mean, it's a little bit different every time, but I just don't care enough to do anything. I mean, I kind of like the slight, you know, one day it's up your nose, one day it's coming on high, one day it keeps things interesting, you know.
Wanted to ask, you had Empire on your bookshelf. Is that Hart and Negri?
Yeah, Hart and Negri's Empire. In fact, I've got the whole trilogy. It's called the Empire Trilogy.
Are they all as good as Empire? I haven't read it, so
I actually think the first one is better than Empire. I'm trying to see if I can find it now. The first book in that trilogy is better, I think, but I've forgotten the name of it. And Empire is largely a kind of retread of the same sort of stuff, where they put in more of a kind of positive vision. I'm trying to remember the name. Let me just have a look. The Hart and Negri. Multitude, War and Democracy in the Age of Empire, and Commonwealth. Yeah, I thought Multitude was probably better than Empire because they go into some of the more clandestine leftist plans that have played out, where they're like, oh, you know, to bring about real democracy, we need to embrace, like, go full hog on the third worldism, basically, as an active plan, you know.
Before we, I know you've got a couple of chats, super chats there, so I just wanted to, could I just give a quick dishonorable mention? Like, obviously, we three here and everyone's been trying to analyze and understand, you know, the events of the last 2 weeks. Two people who've contributed, like, discontributed to understanding it and adding confusion is Alex Craner and Tom Luongo on their recent show. I know you posted a tweet about Alex Craner. I don't know what you'd seen by him, but I watched his show with Tom Luongo and Crypto Rich the other day, and they blamed Hamas's attack in October of 23 and Israel's shit response to it, both to the British, and everything America does except when they do something good. And then Alex Craner also said that Qatar, as well as Israel, are both just arms of British intelligence. They just work for the British. So every aspect of this, apart from Iran, is all controlled out of MI6 or whatever. Yeah.
I mean, I watched Alex Craner, and he attributed what was happening to Trump putting a spanner in European colonialism. The fuck is he talking about? And Dave has super chatted on this. He said, I saw you watch Alex Craner podcast thing. I'm glad I'm not the only other person that thought he was talking absolute nonsense. I mean, it's just insulting. It's just insulting. I mean, the Europeans have been so, if there's one thing we can say about the 12-day war and Israel-Iran, is that Europe was nowhere. They were just completely anonymous, not involved at all. So, yeah, I mean, to me, Alex Craner is like the worst of the worst. Just useless. Active disinfo, you could even argue, at this point.
Yeah. Anti-British as well. Yeah.
Broman Hank says, more MAGA cope theory. Trump's attack on the media could be telling them to pretend it was successful, lest they have to go back to finish the job. Just shut up and let me take you off the ramp. Yeah, I kind of read it that way as well. And it's kind of interesting that the media is trying to undermine him. Studio Rayner says, Tucker is old school CIA. Looks like a nice guy until he collapses your country. He also says, how do you bankrupt a circus? He also says, Irish are Celts, so wouldn't they be considered an endangered species or whatever? Just dump immigrants on their island. Dave says, I think your dad is right, AA. A lot of guys like Sachs, Blumenthal, etc. are there to sell a narrative. They don't give you any real info either. That was my dad's complaint about those guys, is that they don't really have any info, really. Tales from my Zuma CPA says, the Hodge twins were big fitness YouTubers that pivoted to the MAGA culture of war politics. If that makes adds to them being organic or credible or not. Jack Stone says, I can't think of anything the regime could do to make Americans rally behind their flag. The US is basically in a civil war, but that's the homeland, doesn't affect the empire. Let me just go back a minute. Did you notice that Starmer was using the language of homeland? The homeland needs to be defended.
Yeah.
What do you make of that language from Starmer, Horace? Have you ever heard the US, the UK government talk about the homeland?
Just that tweet from yesterday, whatever it was, and I didn't really look into it. What was that all about? I did see that reference. So, yeah, there's a possibility of war in the homeland. Was that referring to Iranian sleepers or was that something else?
Well, they're talking about Russia. They're talking about Iran, you know.
In fact, like, war actually happening in Britain. Like, what on earth?
I think this is tied in with that article about preparing for the war kind of anticipation mindset.
Right. Whatever they're saying there, they mean ordinary British people refusing their agenda, right? That's the war that they're talking about.
Jack Stone says, remember, half the country hates MAGA and the other half doesn't care. MAGA online makes it seem like a big movement. If Americans can't rally behind their flag, then it's just an animal farm. Well, I saw that 85% of all Americans were not up for a war for Israel, basically, or a war against Iran. That was what I saw. Bloodbase says, Laura Luma got plastic surgery to look more like, to look more like who she claims she is, and that is real. Okay, if you say so. Jack Stone says, money first is the reality, and I don't care. I don't know anyone that takes America first seriously. The American dream is go there while some garbage, make some money and go home. If you fail, you get stuck in America. Bloodbase says, Luma is not ethnically Jewish. Neon LF Grave says, can you talk about the mass deportations that are going to happen in Iran? They talk about kicking all the Afghans out. I guess that was Trump's 4D chess. Well, my dad reckons there are 15 million Afghans who've come over the border since the Taliban took over, many of whom were part of the old regime, which were US friendly. And they were involved in the decapitation strikes. They were part of the infiltration. So now they're accelerating Afghan deportations. They've also claimed to have arrested 700 people who were working for Mossad. And in fact, they've started they've executed two of them at the time of this, as last I saw. And they arrested 70 Indians as well who were caught working for the Israelis.
That's a new, yeah. I support the Iranian people and regime in their effort to rid themselves of the Afghan scourge.
Yeah, that they are also screening all Indians who are going to enter the country now. Every Indian who comes over, goes into Iran is going to be screened to try to make sure that they're not secretly working for Israel. Studio Reina says, I'm waiting for Lindsey Graham to respond. He's the foreign policy president. Red Blaze says, Horace, have you been lumered?
Meaning what? Have I had plastic surgery? No.
No, have you met Laura Loomer and had sex with her? I think that's what he means. Neon LF. I mean, the thing is, there's not much overlap between those sorts of Laura Loomer circles and the ones that Horace would be part of. Neon Grave says, it's very exhausting living in history. Kind of make me empathize more with the boomers who lived during the Cold War. Studio Reina says, are you Persian or an Afghan? Who thought he was Persian? Well, I'm definitely not an Afghan. I can tell you that much, Studio Reina. My brother thinks that my dad's people actually predate the Persian invasion to the Elamite period. My dad's had a DNA test and he's pretty pure.
To add to your dad's figures on Afghans in Iran, I've been sent a UNHCR fact sheet from January, March 2024, which says that Iran hosts 760,874 Afghans. Overall, 3.7 million forcibly displaced persons of various nations currently residing in Iran. So the UNHCR challenging the figures there.
Yeah, well, I mean, my dad reckons that the official figures are way below the actual number. And if you count all of the Afghans all in, it's about 15 million, he reckons.
UNHCR is pro-refugee as well, I would just say that. I don't know how that affects the figures.
Well, yeah, I was going to say it is the UNHCR, yeah.
Studio Radio says Iranian women are becoming educated and they're going to end up like Britain. Well, I did see that about 70% of all graduates in Iran are women. Or STEM graduates or something. They do have a huge amount of female students there. The feminist Ayatollah. Reina says, Zoomers don't care much about anything. The future is bright. UTS4321 says, end dual citizenship. Reina says, Stalin was an ubermensch of liberalism, born when Russia was in civil war, died making it into a rival nuclear power to the USA. Yeah, he also says, to make our Orwellian permanent Cold Wars, there needs to be flare-ups so people think they are threatened, right? Or else neighbors turn on each other. It has been. I always remember the Delling poll where he had Norman Tebbit on. What we need is a good war, he said. Sort us all out. Mm. And I guess the thinking is if there was a war, it would draw the disparate elements of British society together. I'm not sure of that theory. I think much more likely is that in a time of war, a lot of the newcomers would get cold feet, sharpish, because they're not willing to die for the country. John Bagot Glubb talks about this in his Fate of Empires book. He says, look, when the shit hits the fan, these people who you know, claim they embrace their new home type thing, you quickly find out that they don't. And this is a recurring pattern all the way through history. So,
of course, Yvette Cooper in Parliament yesterday making the case for ID cards.
Yeah. And of course, every time they talk about security, it increases that agenda as well. So anyway, there we go, friends. That was that. Where can people find you, Simon?
At Simon_Roberts on Twitter. Thanks very much again for tuning in.
Boris?
Yeah, thanks, everyone. My link's just under the video at Substack.
We'll
We'll be back with Adam Curtis next week. I will be streaming again tomorrow, where I'll be doing office hours, wrapping up on all the super thanks and the super chats. Maybe we'll actually talk about some other topics, because I've exclusively talked about this week, because it at one point looked like World War III was going to break out, and then it didn't. It's kind of been a crazy week. Son of Leviathan says, isn't ICE a secret organization? It's not secret. That was the official border security. Mm. Anyway, pick up a course at the academic agency. Oh, and before we go, I should mention, I have subscriptions turned on Twitter now, and I now have 3 subscribers on Twitter. And I said, if I get over a certain number, let's say if I get into double digits, over 10, I may start a new variety show, which is a Twitter exclusive, an exclusive. And then if it goes well, maybe I can snip bits out and put them on here, or put it on one of my other channels on YouTube. But if there's enough interest, I'll do subscriber-only shows there, where I'm going to do more kind of variety things where they're a bit more chilled out. And I want to do things like, I want to watch the many love lives of Dobby Gillis, for example, where that Chatsworth Osborne Jr. comes from. You know, they're calling her Chatsworth Catalson. Yeah, exactly. And just stuff like that, which I can't really... We can watch Curtis on YouTube, but I a lot of other things would get copyrighted, unfortunately. So, yeah. All right. Thank you very much, everyone. Pick up a course, and I'll see you all tomorrow.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's easily fixed.